What's up, you guys? How are you? Hey, it's Ari Shaffir. Welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. On this episode, I'm talking to my friend Tate Fletcher. You guys might remember Tate, or you might not, but you may remember him from season 2 of The Ultimate Fighter on Spike Television. It's a television network. It used to have the UFC, and now it's struggling for survival. But Tate was on there for a while. He was trying to be a cage fighter, and then, you know, life moves on, and he decided he didn't want to slur for the rest of his life. So he went into acting a little bit and a bunch of other stuff, and he runs a gym. But what he also does, and this is what I was most concerned with, is he's a stuntman. He's an actual legit stuntman. He's huge, by the way. He's like a monster person. He's the type of person you would be scared of if you saw him fucking your wife and you came in. You'd almost be like, oh, so sorry to disturb you guys. Margaret, we'll talk about this later, but go ahead and finish up. You guys do whatever you need to. That's how big he is. He's also bald and he has all these tattoos. He's just a big fucking man. So he's a stuntman. So we just talked about what that was like, you know, all the details and all the ins and outs of it. It was kind of interesting. I don't know about you guys. I've never met a stuntman before in my life. So it was cool. He came over to my apartment and we talked about shit. And then we went to eat salads and he told me that humans shouldn't eat grains. No wheat. He doesn't eat wheat. He doesn't eat what is the other grains? Quinoa, couscous. He doesn't eat Israeli couscous. So pretty much the whole goddamn Whole Foods salad bar that I've been going to every day when I get high. It's the best, by the way, if you go to Whole Foods. Not all of them have it, but some of them. Because like if you go to a regular supermarket and go to the salad bar, you get like raw everything. Raw lettuce, raw mushrooms, raw tomatoes, onions, all that stuff. But at Whole Foods, they have that raw salad bar too, and then you put whatever dressing on. But then they also have the sweet salad bar with like different flavored tofus and two different types of couscousim. And then they have tabbouleh, a couple flavors of that. They have these sweet lima beans and garlic. It's just all this sweet. It's like they have kale with this emerald lemon. No, they have garlicky kale, which is not as good. But they used to have it was sesame. It was like lemon sesame or emerald sesame kale. Kale is probably looks like the grossest of all the vegetables. It was so fucking good. My shits came out often and massive. I took the biggest dump I've ever taken. If you check my Twitter account, it's at Ari Shaffir, you will see a picture of a dump I took that was so monstrous that not only did it clear the level of water, it pretty much, like as it was shitting more and more, it just continued up until there was just no change. It was just straight from my ass into the pile of shit. Like it was all together. It was like a silo had opened up and started pouring grain out. Like the end of Witness. You guys remember that? Where Harrison Ford had to pretend like he was Amish for a while to protect some kid who witnessed a murder. Anyway, at the end, the silo opened up and fucking buried somebody. But the silo didn't empty completely. But by the time the pile like moved high enough, it went into the area of the silo. So it just stopped up the rest of the grain from coming out. That's what my dump was like. It was so massive that I dumped to the asshole level. Not quite that far. But I'm telling you, it's so fucking good. But Tate told me that I can't eat any of these goddamn grains anymore. They're bad for me. Humans aren't supposed to eat grains. Look, here's the deal. If you help somebody with your – because he got in my head about it. If you help somebody try to become better at like working out or dieting or anything like that, don't concentrate on the shit they're not doing. Give them a kudos and an attaboy for the shit they are doing. Okay? It's like people are like, oh, you know, I run every day now for an hour a day. Instead of going like, oh, that's awesome, man, because you're a fat fuck. So that's awesome that you run for an hour a day now. Instead, what everybody else does is they go, oh, yeah, we're running. It's only cardio. You got to lift weights. You got to mix that with like cross train and PDX 90 it. And it's like, why are you ruining this guy's dream, okay? It's just fucking rude. By the way, the rudest thing I ever did, I'm just remembering this now. This is so wrong. But the rudest thing I ever did was I was driving, I believe I was in the passenger seat. It was in Silver Spring, Maryland, on Arcola Boulevard. At a light, this lady was jogging, and she was chubby. This is when I was in high school. She was chubby. And you know how people get up to a light when they're jogging and they sort of like keep jogging but in place at the light while she's waiting for it to change? So I was stopped at the red light. She was waiting for it to change and she just stopped jogging. She didn't jog in place. She just stayed still. And I rolled down my window and she could sort of tell because I was right next to her in the car. She was right outside the window. So she looked over and I just go with a serious face right as our light turned green. I just go, keep running. It was so fucking wrong. God, I wanted to laugh at it, but I can't. I was so fucking evil. She was trying to work on herself. She was getting out there. She was jogging. She was a fat chick trying not to be fat. And some asshole punk fucking 16-year-old Jew just ruined her dreams and told her hopefully she kept running. God, I'm so embarrassed. Do you ever think about stuff like that and just get embarrassed about the way you used to think? Anyway, so that's this episode. It's all about Tate Fletcher and his job being a stuntman. It's really fucking interesting. You'll listen to it. You'll gain a lot out of it. In terms of stand-up, I'm taping my CD. It's this coming week. If you guys are around Denver, Colorado, please come to the Comedy Works on Saturday. Just get your tickets already. Just Saturday, May 12th. Is when I'm recording. I'm doing all three shows. I'm recording all three shows and just mixing those in. But I'm also there 10th and 11th, so come to those too if you can't do the 12th. But I want all the cool people to come on the 12th, so the show's better. And then I'm going to Kansas City to Stanford and Sons. Oh, it's Comedy Works, by the way, is the club in Denver. Stanford and Sons in Kansas City, May 16th through the 20th. My next Storyteller show, which I love. Those are my favorite LA shows. And I'll be doing new material for that because I always do because I'm out of fucking stories. So I have to think them up. It's May 22nd at the Improv. It's all stories of near-death experiences. I believe Ralphie May is going to be doing it. I still have to ask some other people. I don't know who I'm going to ask. But Ralphie May, he was so fucking good the last time he did. He did the Storyteller show. And I'm assuming he'll be good. He's one of the few guys that really fucking tackles it like he should. He does. Bert Kreischer does. Joey Diaz does. There's a few guys who have done it multiple times, Moshe Kasher, Margaret Cho, but they're always fucking good. They go for it, and they're funny and fucking poignant. I would like to say poignant, but I can't really because I'm not positive what it means. So come to that, May 22nd. It's at the Improv, and by the way, we've made it a full charity show now. So we're donating not just the profits, all the fucking proceeds. Oh, I got to tell them so they don't fucking tax me on it. But I'm just giving away, I have been, but I'm just giving away all the money we get. We keep it at $5 so everybody can come in and get a seat and just fucking watch a great show. That's all I really care about is just doing great comedy. So we keep it at $5 and we're giving the money to Planned Parenthood because that is a charity that directly affects my life. Because I don't know if you guys know, but I'm a huge fan of abortion. And Planned Parenthood is a great place to get one. So if you're ever in the market for an abortion, please check out Planned Parenthood immediately. They give the best and the most often abortion-wise. So we are really giving the money to Planned Parenthood because they're under attack from the Republicans and the fucking Christians. So they do a lot more than just abortions. But don't downplay the abortions. Those are really important. And then June 7th through the 9th, I'm at Foxwoods, at Comics at Foxwoods in Connecticut. And June 13th, I'm at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco. June 13th, that's a big show because they get like most of the door. So come out to that if you're in San Francisco. And then right after that, I go from there straight to Sacramento to do the punchline for the week. But it's just one show in San Francisco, June 13th. Just get your tickets. I don't know how much they are. Hopefully not above 20. And come out. I'll do a couple stories that I'm going to bury after the CD, and then the rest will be the 40 minutes I've built since then. So I think that's it. Wait, was there anything else? Oh, yeah, and I'm doing Blues Fest in Ottawa. Anyone who's in Ottawa. Oh, by the way, the fucking secret show in Toronto was awesome. Anybody who was there, it was so fucking fun. It was so much fun. I did some corporate gig the night before, and it was terrible. There was like 200 people there, and 20 of them were listening. It was just not good. But I did get to meet Doug Gilmore, some Hall of Fame hockey player, which I just got into hockey, so I don't really know him. But I also met Bob Levy, the comedian. He's really cool and funny. But Brutus the Barber Beefcake was there, popular WWF wrestler from the fucking 80s and 90s, Brutus the Barber Beefcake was there, and he fucking cut somebody's hair. They set up a stage like some guy said wrestling's fake. It wasn't that good a setup. And then Brutus put him in a chokehold and then chopped off his hair with his clippers. It was pretty fucking cool. But the next day, I went and performed at one of my top five clubs or rooms to perform in the world, the Underground Comedy Club, Clandestiny. It's sort of a secret room, semi-secret, in Toronto. I'm not going to tell you where it is or what the deal is, but it's fucking cool. And there was 100 people there fucking smoking pot during the entire time the show was on. It was just thick in the air. It was such a fun show. My friends Patrick Capolino and Manolo Zantanos and Rob Mayhew, they all opened. All those, they're all Toronto comics. And it was just a fucking great vibe. It was 100 people. I thought there'd be 15 people that showed up because I was just there. But it was like 100 people. I think she said over 100. It was just cool. Some of these like old like pot patients, like real fucked up. They needed to survive kind of stuff. And then a bunch of people were just fans. And they were all potheads. Some people didn't smoke, but everybody got a secondhand high. I'm telling you, this thing was like a giant hot box. I had, at some point, I had to ask Manolis, the other comic, to bring me an orange juice. Because just being on stage, my voice was getting so fucking, my throat was getting so raspy and chopped up. Just because you could barely even see. It was so thick. And everyone was just there having a great time. It was just such a fun environment. And that's what I love about stand-up. Just shows like that. Man, I love that room. So thank you to Puff Mama for putting it together. Thank you to Bong Man. I forgot your real name, but for Bong Man, for afterwards, for getting us high off that crazy butter hash, whatever that was. And just everybody who showed up, thank you very much. It's the only reason I do comedy is for the feeling I get when I do comedy. And when you guys come and make it that cool feeling – that just makes it all worth it. It's like what parents must feel or what they say they feel when they see their child smiling at them and they're like, this all makes it worth it. It sort of is like that for stand-up. When you get a great show, I don't care if it's a free show, if it's a bar room across town, or if it's some like gigantic fucking venue with 3,000 people. If the crowd is cool, it just keeps you doing stand-up. It just gets you into it. Everybody laughs. They're chilled out about the harsh stuff. They know that I'm making jokes about harsh things. They don't get like, how dare you talk about this? I had some lady at the Comedy Store tell me that I was a – what was that? She goes, you're a sick bastard. But she didn't say it in a funny way. Like, you sick bastard. She was like, you're a sick bastard. And I was like, ma'am, do not use that kind of language. So anyway, thank you all for coming out. I really do appreciate it. And that's why I want all you guys to come, if you're there, to come in Denver on Saturday so that cool people will be in my show and not – horrible, annoying people. Also, I'll be in Ottawa for Blues Fest. Did I say that? I'll be doing the first 4 days of Blues Fest with Paula Bell. So, I'll see you there. And if you're in Ottawa, I'll probably need places to go to hang out and do stuff after the shows and after the music festival is over at 11 p.m. every day. So come by. Let's all hang out. Let's do some fun stuff. In terms of sponsors, I still have Amazon.com and Gamefly.com. I guess you guys have just started like using it. They told me it would take like 3 or 4 weeks before that's how advertising works. So now you start using it, and I made some cash. So thanks a lot, you guys. I really appreciate it. People all clicked on the Gamefly. It's just – you just go and do it. You just go to Gamefly.com/Ari and sign up for a 2-week free trial. You can cancel after that. You can keep going. It's a cool service. So if you're into video games, keep doing it. It's cheaper than buying new games and then like wasting them. But if you're not into it, just do the 2-week free trial. They give me like a grip of cash, and it's fucking helping me pay for everything. So what I got for the last month has paid for all the guests I've paid for. And then Amazon.com. If you're ever shopping at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, if you're in Canada – please go through my website first, arishafir.com, and just on the right-hand side, there's three links. There's a link that says price, selection, convenience, amazon.com. It's brown. If you click on that, that takes you to Amazon, and then you can just shop. You can just do your regular shopping. There's one right below that that says amazon.ca. That's for Canadians. I figured out why they need a separate one, because if they do the .com, everything gets shipped from America. And if they do the .ca, everything gets shipped from wherever they do it in Canada. So just go to there. Click. It's like one extra click. Instead of going straight to Amazon, you go to Ari Shaffir or AriTheGreat.com and then click Amazon. And then if you're already logged in to Amazon, you'll still be logged in. And just do all your regular shopping. It won't cost you a dollar extra. They just give me percentage back. I figure if they're making like off $100, if they make like $25, they'll just – I don't know what their take is. Let's just say it's $25. They give me two. Like, it comes out of their end. So that's my point. I have no idea how much I'm making. It's probably not $25 out of $100. That seems really high. So go there. And then there's a link for the Gamefly thing too. If you can't remember, gamefly.com/Ari. Go there. So thank you. I really do appreciate you guys clicking on those, because then they keep me doing this and happy. So thank you. I really, really appreciate it. So Zehakol. That's it, everybody. That's the sponsor portion of the show. Don't worry. It's over. And now on to the interview. I really do like this one. And by the way, in Toronto, I got a couple really good podcasts done. So I didn't think I would, but there were two like legitimately good ones. So those will be out in the next few weeks. But now we talk about being a stuntman. It's really cool, you guys, by the way. There's some stuff in there I didn't really know, and there's some stuff I knew, but I wasn't really completely like up on, and there's like all of it. How much you pay? You know how I do stuff. I just ask questions. So thank you very much, Tate Fletcher, for coming in. And here we go, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, number 58, Stuntman with Tate Fletcher. Stuntman? You think that's a good one? Or Fall Guy? Does anybody remember the Fall Guy? No one's going to remember that, right? That show was off the air when I was fucking 10. Nobody's going to remember that. So let's just call it Stuntman with Tate Fletcher. Oh. Also, Ralphie May will be at the Improv in L.A. March 18th and 19th. So if you're in L.A. before the 22nd, go see Ralphie. I'll be in Kansas City, so I don't give a fuck. Go see Ralphie at the Improv in Los Angeles, May 18th to 19th. He's, I think, one show Friday, two shows Saturday. Hurry up and get tickets, because it'll sell out. He's a great comic. You guys will really like him. He does a long time, so you get your money's worth, and then some. Okay, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, number 58. Stuntman with Mr. Tate Fletcher.
I've never spent much time in school, but I told ladies plenty. It's true, I hire my body out for pay. Hey, I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Raquel Welch. But when I wind up in the hay, it's only hay. Hey, I might jump an open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine. 'Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.
Sennheiser, man. Quality mics. We've started, so you got to talk into it instead of looking at it.
Well, you mentioned it. I have an awe.
Yeah. Why Sennheiser? Why are you so in awe of Sennheiser? Do you not know mics at all?
It says right on it, made in Germany.
Oh.
Yeah, right underneath Sennheiser, in pretty big letters.
We've pretty much forgiven now, Tate.
You've forgiven what?
Everyone's pretty weird gotten over that. I have cousins that live in Germany, an aunt and uncle.
Can I ask you this? Do you still believe that the Holocaust never happened?
I still have questions.
Yeah.
Where are the bodies? That's my biggest question. Wouldn't we see bodies around? I love conspiracy people, because you come up with this question and you're like, on the surface, like, yeah, where are the bodies? And then you're like, you just need an expert to be like, no, they've been buried in another country. They weren't here. They wouldn't just be around on display.
I think there was some lie that was thrown at them, perhaps, and they're disintegrated.
Where are all the graves? They're out there. You can just Google them, and you can see them.
So good.
Yeah, I have cousins that live there. I don't care about that shit.
It doesn't take a whole lot of you just throw a little question in, and any kind of smarts goes out the window, and people believe almost anything. Be like, I think you really got a point there.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, no, my cousin got sick after he washed his hands, too. I think washing your hands is bad.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I had a roommate that I used to play golf with, and he was probably within a stroke of me, golf-wise, but he would play so stupid that he would always lose by 20 strokes. He would, like, hit one in the woods, which happens. You got to chip out. You got to chip out.
You say that stupid. I say he's a believer. It's a, he was a dreamer.
That's what it is.
A dreamer.
He'd see a little hole through the trees, right at the green.
Could happen.
And a one in a million shot. Be like, I can get through that hole.
Might happen.
And he hit it, and he knocked it further into the woods.
Somebody's going to do it.
Somebody
Why
would do
him?
It.
Why not him?
But it's just a hero shot that would cost him so many strokes.
Yeah.
And
you
it's
know,
like.
Do you recognize the part of that word you said? Hero. Hero shot, Ari. And that's why your people are where you are in life, and then Scottish people are where they are.
Where they are, yeah.
Because they're some heroes. Yeah.
Really? Oh, I thought they were the same place as victimized.
You didn't see Braveheart?
I saw Braveheart. The guy died in the end. Spoiler! but he would wear a glove sometimes, a golf glove, which stops you from chafing.
Your friend.
Yeah. And then sometimes he'd be like, he'd take the glove off.
Is that like guys that wear gloves in the gym? Because it's a little bit
No, most people wear a golf glove. Most golfers wear golf gloves. But then sometimes he'd take it off or break. And so I'm taking this off. And then he'd play well for three holes. He'd be like, oh!
Interesting.
That's it. The secret is not wearing a golf glove. And then he'd have two rounds of that, play shitty, and then he'd be like, let me try a golf glove again. And then he'd have like two good holes. He's like,
so
you got to wear a golf glove.
You know, all those sports.
Go back and forth.
Like, there's a bunch of guys that have great, you know, everybody can hit a hole in one. You've probably done that, right?
Can you take your shoes off that chair?
Have you seen your apartment?
That chair is the only nice thing about it.
There's nothing nice about
that chair. I got that from The Price is Right.
I put a video up, actually.
Of my apartment?
On Twitter, of
it's
your
not,
toilet and your apartment and your fucking pretty face.
It's cluttered right now.
It's cluttered. Nobody would look at anything in here and be like, boy, that would be really out of line to put your feet up on that
Just
coat.
Take your shoes off. I
sure,
know, but
sure.
You wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah, you have stinky jujitsu feet.
Oh, look at your feet. Anyway, Jew Claw. My point is this.
Yeah.
Is that Tiger Woods, he's not hitting a bunch of hole-in-one, but he's average consistently. And that just being consistent makes him a fucking world champion.
Yeah, he knows how to chip out sometimes.
Most people are like your friend.
Yeah.
And they'll have real exceptional holes, and then they'll burn four.
Yeah. You got to know what's the pros and cons of doing this. Let me give you a quick primer, just so you know.
Prime me up.
Because they're handheld mics, and normally I'm used to doing it with comics who handle this more.
Yeah.
Your tendency, if you want to turn, is to keep the mic in place and turn like
this. I've got
to
turn like this, don't I? I've got to follow it around this way.
Yeah. Even comics make that mistake, though, so don't worry about it.
Well, hey, I'm not worried. You think I'm insecure because I have a big black phallic symbol made in Germany in my mouth? I'm not insecure about this. It's not my first time with a big black microphone, okay?
So my guest today is Tate Fletcher.
Hi.
Tate and I go back, I don't know how many years, 7, 8 years?
We go back a lifetime, 9, 10. Really.
Something like that.
I feel like our relationship's transcendental.
But you work as a stuntman.
I do.
You make a fucking full living off that, right?
I make a full living off of being a stuntman.
That's really cool. How long have you been doing that?
Maybe 2 years. The last year has been really
good.
But
you were doing it more before that, right?
Yeah, I started right when I started fighting. Not really. I mean, I think it was 2000, I was in a masterpiece, kind of masterpiece, I guess you would call it. Masterpiece.
Masterpiece.
Called Lockdown.
Uh-huh. And, which one was that? He's in prison?
Yeah, it was a prison show, Ari.
Remember Master P? Oh, it was
really,
a show?
You really put it together. It was a movie.
Oh, okay. Remember when Master P put his name on the Eddie Griffin movie?
So anyway, I was working in a nightclub, and these dudes came in, black guys in New Mexico. It's not very common. Mm-hmm. And they said, we need some big white boys for this film, and I fit the bill and saw it.
Because you're out there training, and there's a lot of shooting out there. Right?
That's where I first started jiu-jitsu. I started with the Dog Brothers and stick fights, and then jiu-jitsu out there. And so I was working in a nightclub, and then I was training.
Wait, you did stick fights?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever get in a real stick fight?
It was back when the Dog Brothers weren't a kind of gay, milky, watered down group. We were fucking, it was just a bunch of dudes that would get together in a park in Hermosa Beach on the spring and fall equinox, and we'd fight. There'd be gatherings. And
would there be like,
you'd fight with sticks with no armor on.
And you get hit with sticks?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, it wasn't like those Q-tip things from American Gladiator?
No, different. But that always looked fun to me,
That looked fun as fuck.
And it looks way more forgiving than what I did.
Yeah. First of all, you're wearing helmets.
My teacher, Arlen Sanford, he fought a dude with a chain, fought a guy with a bullwhip,
a
guy with a bat.
Really?
Yeah.
Just for the fun of it?
Yeah, just to see, you know? Like, you can articulate movement, like, you're much more dexterous with a stick than, like, you got a whip or a chain. You get one shot, and then I'm closing the distance, and you don't get another. You can't rechamber quickly enough. With a stick, you can rechamber quickly, you know?
Just swing again.
And so,
like a musket would be the hardest.
Exactly. You swing a bat at somebody. Maybe there's a lot of damage, but real easy to miss them, and you get one chance.
A bat.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't re-swing a bat very quickly. Better than rechambering a whip or
remember
a chain.
Remember when Bruce Lee used that piece of bamboo against, what did the guy have, nunchucks?
I don't recall, but yeah, Arlen fought
Game of Death, right?
Nunchucks also.
Wasn't it Game of Death?
Oh, was Kareem in that one?
Kareem was in that one. I'm going to call this up because I want to see it. Right. I have capabilities of I forgot. I haven't
shot. So anyway, yeah, I started like 10 years ago, right before I started doing... I got into grappling. I got into jiu-jitsu. And there was a scumbag that I started jiu-jitsu with. And then I ended up working with more reputable people down at Jackson's gym. But
Greg Jackson?
Yeah. But it just was... it seemed like a fluke. Like... working in film and all that, and here's this poor kid from Michigan and da-da-da-da-da, and the stunt coordinator is like, dude, you should come out, stay in my house, and see where this goes. And
he
I was like,
you up?
Yeah, like in Sherman Oaks. He lived out in Sherman Oaks, and I was like, I've got a job where I can train and I can do everything, and I don't have to work two or three jobs, and I think I'm just going to stay here, play it safe, you know? And I started competing, and so then I kind of started my grappling career, and I traveled all over the world doing submission wrestling tournaments and jiu-jitsu tournaments and placed in all the top tournaments around the world, and the Pan Ams and the Naga and
you just hit.
Grappler's Quest. And I'd go and I'd grapple everywhere, you know, and I'd travel around as an amateur athlete. And then as soon as cage fighting, it kind of got more on. I was like, man, I want to do that. I fought a guy with a weapon. I fought in, you know, multiple guys in tournaments, fighting one guy on one night with just my fist. Like, that sounds awesome. And
you were into that.
So that's when I got into cage fighting. And I'd only done, I'd do little shows here and there when they'd come up, but I never really looked after acting or entertainment work. And then when I, you know, got to the end of my fighting career, and I'm like, I'm either going to really, you know, I started late, and like when I ended, I was like, God, what am I going to do? Milk this out for another 5 years and become like a, you know, I'd seen a lot of guys that fought too long, and I didn't want to be one of those guys.
Yeah, I remember when you said, we're like, I'm in my mid-30s.
Yeah, like, it's like, you know.
It's over already.
And so.
Yeah, those punchy people got punchy, where you're like,
yeah,
you talk weird.
And it's just sad, and it's like you're living off a name that was, and like now it's just, meh. And so anyway, a guy came into my gym in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I've got a 10th Planet school there and a CrossFit gym, and he was working on a film in Santa Fe, and we just got really, you know, we bonded through jiu-jitsu.
What movie?
It was called Paul.
Okay.
And it was an alien, Simon Pegg, and it was an alien movie.
Oh.
And so I got a few weeks on that working with him,
What do you mean? Okay, when you say a few weeks, what do you mean?
Like, I played a character for, like, this was recurring in that film, and so I got a bunch of days on it. I got, you know, 15 or 20 days work on the film, and got a little spot in there, mostly stunt work, but at the end you can see me with the alien getting healed by the aliens. It was kind of fun.
Really?
But I then started looking at like how to make that a real career and how to really get some.
So you did it more, just more and more?
And so then, yeah, I got asked to go on Red Dawn. We remade Red Dawn in 2009. And
I barely remember that.
It was this Patrick Swayze mega hit in the 80s.
No, I barely remember the remake.
It hasn't been out yet.
Oh,
so
that's why I don't remember.
You smoke so much weed, don't you?
Oh, so much.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be released probably this year.
Oh,
but,
good.
But it was.
I remember you talking about it, and then I was like,
"It was with the Chinese people were the bad people, not the Russians this time." But
good.
Then,
but fuck it, it's about time.
Hey. But then Chinese company bought the studio, and so they had to in post. I think the rumor is in post they had to make them all Koreans.
Really?
And so they had to change the flags and stuff around. I think that's what the holdup was. Anyway, but I've heard it's made and I heard it's awesome. So anyway, regardless, I just went in and
all they would have to do really, this is all they would have to do is every time somebody says Chinese. Just change that to Korean.
Yeah, exactly.
And then use everything else the same and no one would know.
It's the same kind of evil, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then I actually just worked for a South Korean director. It's his first time in the United States. This last fall was for a Schwarzenegger film, his big comeback film.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay, so hold on.
So anyway.
So they hire you as a stunt worker.
Right.
And then what do you just show up day one and they tell you what you got to do?
Usually what happens is you build relationships with coordinators, with guys that are getting shows and running the shows.
That's how you get the work.
That are like the lead men on it.
Uh-huh.
And
what do you mean the lead men?
Like you'd be the stunt coordinator or the second unit director.
That's the guy to know. That's the guy hiring.
And so it's kind of like that. It's not like you go through casting or anything else. You're like the stripper of the film world. Kind
if you
of.
Knew one of the stars, could you get in that way?
No.
No.
I mean, you could if they're really powerful
really
stars.
High and would take the time.
And I've got friends that are like, they have an actor, right? Like a friend of mine. You know, if you're like somebody's guy, like if you're Bruce Willis's guy,
yeah.
you're probably written into his contract at a certain wage rate.
Oh,
and
nice.
Every time Bruce works, you're there for the run of the show.
I heard they
not
have like
just the stunt days.
I heard they have stand-in people like that, like Tom Cruise's stand-in person, whoever that is, makes yeah. like $400,000 a year.
Yeah, I don't know what their pay is, but
it's
yeah,
like, I like this guy. He doesn't talk to me.
He's got doubles.
He looks
and
close
all
enough
that.
To my height, and just fucking yeah. he leaves.
Yeah.
I give him a bonus at Christmas, and I don't know his name.
Yeah, and some of those guys, like Tom is one of those guys that he kills himself too, man. He's that's an athlete, that guy.
What do you mean? Because like you just worked with him, right?
He's a real, like, he's an athlete. That,
what do you mean? Like he works out a lot?
Hard, and he does his own stunts. Like, he's that guy.
Okay, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask. When somebody says, like, I see it all the time on, like, Entertainment Tonight or whatever I used to watch, they're like, I did my own stunts.
Right.
What does that mean?
A lot of it means it's bullshit.
A lot of it means just they did one little stunt?
I think that's what a lot of it means. I mean, I'm kind of new in the business. I don't really know a lot of stuff, you know, but, like, I feel like it's a lot of it is grandiose. Like, I did some stuff with Megan Fox, right? And
yeah.
they had a big thing on Entertainment Tonight about her doing her own stunts.
Yeah.
And I was super excited because I saw the thing on Entertainment Tonight, and I was like, man, it's all me, just face. Like, the camera panning in on my face, and she's sneaking up behind me. She's going to cave my head in with a hatchet.
Yeah.
And it was a long sequence. And then I see the movie, and it's like, it's nothing. I'm barely in it at
damn
all.
Damn it.
Like, God damn it.
Like, why don't they use that?
But her whole thing was that she did her own stunts in that. And
yeah.
She did some. I mean, she did stuff with me that I didn't want to do with her. Like, I was afraid for her safety.
For her, yeah.
But then there's other stuff that she did that seemed really simple that she wasn't going to do, you know?
So generally, then, when they say they do their own stunts, it means they've done a couple things.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, no star and no studio is going to let some star do
well,
a jump off
how,
a building
they
thing.
They can't ensure that, you know?
Yeah, if you got to jump off from a top story, like, they're not letting any star do that.
Right.
Like, you're just not allowed.
You can't, well, I mean, and you've
unless
got...
it's the last scene.
You've got five months of filming left. And
if it's the very last scene,
arm,
they're like, you
no
can go
way.
For it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, stunt guys are expendable, for sure.
Because do you guys get injured a lot?
There's the propensity for that, for sure.
I mean, you must be able to break an arm here or there, right?
There's a guy that got killed a few months ago on the Expendables 2.
Really?
That kind of rocked the industry.
Straight accident or just...
He got blown up. There was a charge that was put. And
he was supposed to be nearby, though.
He was in a rubber boat, and he and his friend were going by, and it was supposed to blow up, and then they just, you know, they get
fly out of the boat.
Tossed out of the boat.
Uh-huh.
And I think the special effects guys probably... they were unsure of how big the charge was going to be or whatever, or something happened, something went wrong, they were too close, and one guy passed away, the other guy broke his legs. And
what, from the force
the explosion,
of it blowing up?
From the explosion.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, there's all that stuff, you know? I mean,
see, I always thought that
there's
those
a guy that's a pimp, Bob Brown, he's so badass, dude. As a stuntman, and it's amazing. He jumped from a helicopter onto the top of a skyscraper from like 150 feet above. He's in a moving helicopter.
Really?
I mean, and if you miss, that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a great scene of him jumping out of a window on fire. He's completely enveloped in flames, jumps through a window, breaks the glass, and falls, you know, 100 stories to the ground. And, you know, yeah, there's, I mean, there's.
And so that guy does those things safely?
Yep. But I mean, he's an expert at that. That's his expertise.
Damn.
Is he's a high fall guy.
That's so people have like a specialty.
Sure, yeah. There's guys that drive very well. There's guys, you know what I mean. Everybody's got a different.
Oh, because you have stunt drivers too. That's gonna be a whole
different
stuff.
Like what I learned doing this one thing, this last show I was on, I was in the air. You know, you're, and then just kind of like. The choreography of how you look when you're falling and when you're jumping from one.
Oh.
Because your legs and your arms, you can't flail. It's not just like you jump. It's like the director has a vision of how he wants you to look. So you have to mimic that vision with your body.
Right.
It's really interesting.
It's why weird when somebody gets in the old Westerns. I mean, this is the first stunt people I saw. You fall,
right.
You get shot and fall off a roof.
Right.
and they'd always flop their hands
yeah.
as they're going.
Yeah.
When it's like, wouldn't you like grab the wound and just fall, sort
and
of
just
not
fall
try
over
to fall?
Exactly.
Yeah, you'd be dead.
And different directors see it different ways.
Yeah. So you have to do what they want.
Right.
The fall. You can't just be like, okay, I'm going to jump off the roof. Like, no, not just jump off.
It's weird.
Here's
too,
how you jump off.
All those directors are like, all right, dude, well, I want it to look authentic. Like, I just did this audition yesterday for an insurance company, and they have MMA guys in there, and they have they say, okay, well, we want you to play a ref. And I said, okay. And they said, you know, and you know what that's like. I said, okay. And they're like, but, you know, so really talk to them a lot, yell at them, and get with them, and there's a lot of motion and everything. I'm like, they're like, we want it to look like how a ref looks. And it's like, that's not how a ref looks.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're
exactly.
Like, we want it to be completely authentic like this, which isn't authentic at all. And so you just kind of go, okay, and you go with, you know.
You just have to take it.
Yeah. And you just go and give them what they want.
Is your instinct to want to tell the guy that you don't know what you're talking about?
At first it is, you know, always, but then you're like, it doesn't matter. It's not going to matter.
And at some point you realize, too, on any sort of job, you realize, oh, this doesn't concern me.
Exactly. It's kind of like, I used to be a bouncer, right? And I used to run crews, like security crews.
Yeah.
And you'd come to me looking for a job, and I'd be like, I understand that you've worked a door before, but here's how I want it done.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of look at it like that. Like, everybody's got their vision of how they want it to done,
right,
for whatever era of film it is, for whatever preconceptions.
And you would get called an idiot, I'm sure, by certain people.
And so whatever, like, I'm going to do it exactly how you want it to do. It's not my vision that's getting expressed here on film. It's yours, and that's cool.
My friend Kevin Christie, he's an illustrator. Do you know Kevin?
I do.
But he says that they call illustrators broken wrists. That's their term for them.
Really?
Because all they're supposed to do is paint it how you want me to paint it.
Right.
I'm hired to do this.
Right.
Whatever your artistic intentions are, it's like, it goes out the window with illustration.
Yep. My mom's an artist in Santa Fe, and she's got a friend that's wildly successful.
Yeah.
And I was like, so how? There's so many artists. And I said, I love your stuff, but how are you so successful and other people aren't? He's like, I just found out what the public wanted to buy. I found a niche. He says, it's not what I like to paint, but it's like what they like to buy.
Oh yeah.
And you know, there is that kind of thing. Like, I'm a complete original artist, and at the same time, I have to sell to somebody's vision if I want to make money.
Stanhope said this about stand-up, that he said, Doug Stanhope, he said, once you've taken $1 for doing stand-up,
right,
you are a sellout.
Yeah.
You are then worried about, what should I say on stage to,
it's
what,
like,
will get me paid.
It's like everybody wants to be like, dude, I'm fucking down, and I'm original, and I'm and there's all this kind of shit. Or like in MMA now, I hear guys all the time, God bless them, man, they're
too worried about being original.
There's these kids
instead
that are like,
just like, just do express yourself.
They're
the
like
you want
the,
to.
There's the thing that comes to mind. There's nothing new under the sun. You know what I mean? There's your tone of voice, the way you say stuff. Okay, awesome. But like all this shit about like, I'm on the grind, dude. I'm just grinding down in the gym. Time to grind again. Got to hit mitts. Time to grind. And
that's,
it's like,
how I am with training.
It's like, really? Because it sounds awful. That sounds like a horrific existence, you know? And it's like, how about you're just enjoying life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like I'm in the gym. I'm on the ground. I'm here and I'm getting punched in the face and I'm fucking elbowing people because I love it. Because I love to work hard, and I love, like, that's what fighting was when I started. And now all this money that's in it too is kind of a trip to see the guys that come out of the woodwork, all these little dramatic little Nancy boys that are like, I'm just here just putting in work. And it's like, either you love it or not. To me, you're a fraud. If you're not there for the love of the game, you're a fucking fraud. Go home. I don't care how exciting you are to
watch. Hold on. But why do you have to be a fraud? Can't you just be like, this is my job. I don't like it, but I got to do this as a job.
Because nobody's that good about it. If you get that good about it, then it's because it's something you love doing. You know, you don't get to be – John Jones isn't there just because he's naturally good at it.
Morris,
he loves fighting.
Marcus Camby, and he was playing for like the Clippers when they were terrible.
Right.
Or something, when they have no chance at even playoffs.
Right.
Forget about a title. Just no chance at playoffs. And he says he sees him stretching before the game, and he's just kind of like bored looking on his face, and goes, oh, for him, this is just a job.
Huh.
Like, he's like, they're not.
I think it's time to quit.
He's been here for 6 months.
It's kind of like when I said that I was. That,
but why? Why quit when you're going to make $1.2 million
this year? It's kind of like I said when I was like, what do I do? Drag this out for a few more paychecks?
Oh, right.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're not living your dream. There's nothing, to me, there's nothing exceptional in somebody dragging out a paycheck.
That's like Carson Palmer.
Regardless of if it's working at Walmart or if you're playing baseball.
Yeah. Do you know Carson Palmer? He was just,
I don't know.
He's now playing for the Raiders, but he was playing for the Bengals, and it was enough. They let enough like high. He's a quarterback, a really good quarterback.
Uh huh.
And there's enough high profile people they let go because they couldn't afford them or something. The Bengals couldn't afford them or whatever. And he eventually, after years and years, said, "I'm done playing for the Bengals." And they're like, "Well, you're under contract for two more years." And he goes, "You either trade me or I'm never playing again." And they're like, "We'll wait it out." And he goes, "I have $88 million in the bank." I can show you the receipts. If you think I play football for the money, you're mistaken, and you're going to make a mistake.
That's amazing.
I play for the love, and if I don't love this, I will stop playing.
Yeah.
When you say I have $88 million in the bank.
That's a guy I like.
Yeah.
That's a guy I like. And to me, and then it's not about the money. It's about
it's
his
not
integrity.
About the money.
It's about his honor. And regardless of the money, at the end of the day, shouldn't that be what it's about, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because you don't know any comics that are out there, dude, I got to go on stage again tonight. I've got
some are,
though.
Some are, and they're annoying.
They should kill themselves. Nobody likes that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that guy doesn't like that guy. It's like, please, find your druthers in life.
Please.
Find what it is that turns you on that you can't not do it. Like, that's the thing we should, this whole scarcity, like, I have to do, it's just so tiring. It's damning. It's like, it doesn't need to be that way, I don't think.
What do you mean scarcity?
Like that there's no other job that could do this for me,
right.
So I have to be doing. No, you don't. There's no chain around it. It's
there's a bunch of like this. You can go. Most people that I found, like older, they've had four or five different careers over their time,
yeah,
not jobs, careers.
I mean, and I get it. It's scary, you know. Like I said, I was a drug dealer for a while. I was a thief, and I was great at those things in those times in my life.
You were a professional fuck up for a little bit.
I was a professional at.
Fucking shit up.
And then I naturally segued into the security world and became a bodyguard and ran clubs and this and that. And that was a whole thing. And I just start looking. I go, here's what a guy that's 40 looks like doing that or whatever. I just run it down the pipe.
You saw the future,
you know,
and you're like,
here you are, 18, shooting dope. Here's what a guy that's 40 looks like doing that. I'm like, he lived and that sucks and or whatever. And you know, I just kind of. I'd look at stuff like that.
When you're 18 and shooting dope, it's like, nah, that's a fuck up.
It's like,
up.
Whatever,
when
I'm on the
40,
streets, I'm this and that, and then you're looking and you're like, oh my God, this is where it goes.
Yeah, like, that's who you are.
And so, you know, I've had those huge things in my life where I've, you know, who am I now? I'm not running this club anymore. God, I'm not the big shot in this little town. Who am I now? I'm not a criminal anymore that's respected and feared. Who am I now? I'm not a fighter anymore. Who am I now?
Yeah.
And it's like getting to those things of like, who am I now? That's why it's like the internet guys are so awesome when they work their little job at wherever the fuck they are.
Yeah, but-
and they get mad at people that are doing stuff. It's like, have you ever asked yourself, who are you without all your trappings of your girlfriend, your wife, your car, your money?
But even your job is, like, too. It's like, that's not who I am.
No.
If your job
not
is
at all.
To work as a clerical assistant or as a comedian or
exactly.
as a fighter, it's like, no, you're the guy. I remember when Keith Jardine,
yep.
who we were both like friends with, you're better friends yep. with him than I am, but like early on when I met him, and he's one of the scariest looking cage fighters in the history of cage fighting. It's like, he's
yep.
frightening.
Yep.
First time he came up to me, actually, I'm remembering this now. It was one of those early UFCs that
yeah.
like... Not early.
At the Hard Rock or something.
Yeah, it was at the Hard Rock.
Yeah.
It was like, it's somewhere in Florida.
Yeah.
It's like, and he walks up to me, and I'm just like out of place. I don't want to get in anybody's way. I don't want to.
Awkward.
Yeah, and that's when the weigh-ins were like so light. You'd have like the
yeah.
fighters, their direct camps.
Yeah.
And like
40 people.
40 fans. That's
yeah.
it. That's
yeah.
all that would be there.
Yep.
I remember the tap-out guys came in once, like during the fights, and
yep.
Rogan stopped the interview, the weigh-ins. I'm like, oh, the tap-out guys are here.
Yep.
It's just like a ridiculous, like what?
Yep. Awesome.
But I was afraid of getting in the way, and he walked right up to me, and I was like, moved to the side because there's a scary looking man coming
yep.
at me. But then he walked right up to me, and I was like, uh oh. And he goes,
and how soft is he?
So soft spoken.
Like,
he goes,
his, hey, how
yeah.
are you, buddy? I love your stuff. Like, just this kind,
yeah.
wonderful person.
He has like a fucked up eye and this weird goatee and a
yeah.
bald head. And he was like, hey, excuse me. And I was like, oh, okay. And I walked out of the way. He goes,
yeah.
no, excuse me. Like, you wanted my attention? I was like, oh, fuck, what's happening right now? And he's like, are you the amazing racist? And I was like, maybe. That depends on how you feel about
yeah,
the amazing racist.
Exactly.
Cowboy came up to me, by the way, at in Vegas.
Right.
And he was like, looked at me for a second. He realized who I was.
Right.
I guess you probably introduced me
yeah.
to him to me, me to him. And then he was like, dude.
It's awesome.
He brought his black friends over. And he was like, look, that's the guy who
such
makes
a great
fun of-
character.
Yeah, but what was I saying about Keith Jordan? Oh, but then I realized like he was like, his favorite book was Franny and Zoe.
Right.
At the time. Some J.D. Salinger book. I'm
yep.
like, first of all, did you even have a favorite book?
Right.
Or did you even know what books are? It's
dude,
sort of
that's
like,
all the dude does. You want to find him? He's at Starbucks in the corner reading a book, having a coffee.
Really?
Like, that's, yeah. He likes that, or he likes to go real slow on his motorcycle around. Like, he's a special human, dude. That's the beauty of it, I think. You know, and that's one of my favorite posters is me and him and Diego Sanchez and Carlos Condit.
Yeah.
All on this King of the Cage poster, and it's
you
like,
guys all trained. You all fought in the King of the Cage together.
I fought on cards with Carlos and Diego. I don't know if I ever fought on a card with Keith before.
But you were all on the poster
together?
But
we were all on this poster for advertising or whatever, and because we were all big out of New Mexico. And that's just a love of the game poster, man. It's like all of us that
you
night
that?
Maybe made $2,000. Yeah. Yeah, Keith's got like 50 of them at his house, you know?
Those things are like, yeah, whatever, until they become like 7, 8 years old, and you're like, oh, this is awesome,
dude.
Now.
That's what I thought about, like being on Tough Three, and I was like, fuck this Shamrock Ultimate jersey fighter. And all this shit, uh-huh. And I just wanted to throw it all away. And I'm like, I wonder if I have that stuff. I wonder where it is. It'd be nice to have that, you know?
Yeah, it'd be cool. Yeah, like a part of your life, sort of.
Yeah, but anyway, that's the thing is, like, I think, you know, you come to those different spots and you go, you know, who am I outside all this stuff, you know, to get back to that. Yeah. And it's like when you look at Keith and how he comes up, he's just a fucking loving human looking to be helpful wherever he can in life. You know, and I think like there's some people that at the end of the day, it's like that's kind of when you think about what's my purpose. Like at the end of it all, I want to be kind and I want to do no harm to people, you know, and regardless. And then other than that, I want to have fun. And so how do you have fun? It's like, fuck, for a while, it's like I'm at a club and I'm looking at girls and that's my job. Like, that's fun. And then, you know, great, I'm fighting and fuck, man, that's fun. That's exciting. And the camaraderie and the fellowship and the brotherhood. And then it's like there's nothing more fun than working stunts for me right now. It's just like
you're enjoying it.
I feel like I'm blessed, man. I feel. And so I've had these huge different career changes that I feel like I've just been blessed by, man.
Okay, so let's talk more about it. So one, when you say certain people are like stunt drivers and certain people are better at falls, like those seem like completely different jobs almost.
Right.
I mean, the skills don't translate. Being able to handle a car at high speeds.
Some guys move their bodies very well and other guys move machines very well. Yeah. Like if you need a specialist for motocross, and that's the thing today with the internet, it's like fuck, you can get guys from the X Games to come on.
Sure, wear a helmet. You look just like our star.
Exactly.
So now, oh yeah, good point.
So that's happening.
How much did they get paid where it'd be worth it for a guy from the X Games to come out and do it?
Well, for one thing, those guys in the X Games, it's like MMA being new. Those guys aren't doing it for the money. They fucking love doing it. Awesome. I get to be on a show and maybe meet a superstar and fucking work with some cool guys. Right. And I get to go and do a backflip off my motorcycle.
Which I'm doing
anyway.
Cool, dude.
And you'll pay me, you know, $5,000 to do it or whatever it is, whatever it comes out to. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to spend a Thursday. I mean, you know what I mean? And it's like, it gets like that where it's just like, you get to hang around cool people doing cool shit and you get to create art and then you get to do it on the day and you get to see it in the theater later and that's forever. And it's fucking cool, man. It's neat.
That is neat.
Game of Death.
This is the one I want to play. This.
Okay. You guys, right. What we're looking at right now, Game of Death. It's Bruce Lee, and actually I have my Bruce Lee shirt on today, the same suit that he's wearing, the yellow suit, black stripes.
Hang on, I'm going to get it all set up. You?
And he's, Ari's got to cue it up here.
You ever see Game of Death? How long has it been?
It's been a long time, long time since I've seen Game of Death. I'm excited right now. I want to tell you guys, too, what I saw today coming in here. When I walk in, Ari's got a beautiful place right up on the hill. Basically nestled, if you're not from California, too, you're like, you've heard of Hollywood Hills. He's nestled.
Too much specific information about Ari.
He's nestled right in the foothills of the Hollywood Hills. And, I think it's 2637. I'm not sure, but you're probably not strong enough. You need to basically have ape like strength like me to pull the fucking door open. The thing it's rusted shut nearly. It's all bent. And if you've seen that great show, was it Wesley Snipes? I think that was in it. And Ice-T, of course. New Jack City.
Oh yes.
Where they're trying to storm the projects and all that. So you come off a beautiful Sunset Boulevard into Ari's home on the hills, this apartment complex, and I swear to fucking God, you walk in there and you're walking into the PJs. It's like there's just shit everywhere. There's like a dead wino over to the left. There's somebody shooting dope up in the top corner. And then Ari comes out in his boxers, kind of, he's like secluded a little behind a tree on the upper level, and he's yelling to me from up there. And then all I see is that boxer come down and his beautiful penis fall out of his boxers.
A beautiful dick. I was like, I'm up here, bro.
And I swear to God, Nino Brown is in the next apartment right now. It's an amazing spot he's got here.
It really is.
You get indoors.
Such a mess of these cords.
You get indoors and it's even better. There's nice Velvet Elvis. And
that Velvet Elvis is one of my favorite purchases of all time.
Yeah. It looks like Red Man, actually, with sideburns a little bit. Because he's not really in his deep, deep fat days, but he's a little heavy set.
When I get really high on on acid or mushrooms, some sort of psychedelic, on my way down, if I'm like in the calm stages,
right.
I've done everything, so I can talk to you about it. But like, if I'm in the just the sort of thinking about stuff stage,
yeah.
I look at this picture. I don't know why, but I always center on the white of his eye.
Uh huh. And normally I can see that.
Yeah, I was just like, the white of your eye is not really painted. It's just like it's blank.
Yeah.
But this was painted. Somebody
painted the white
onto this, and I was just—I always think about some human that actually took the time to, like, not lovingly, but sort of love, like, carefully.
Yeah, carefully
painting to represent Elvis Presley's eye.
It took an exact hand.
Yeah, and I think of how beautiful it is.
I never ever looked at one of these roadside paintings like that, but I have a new appreciation right now sitting here today. Now, you talk about psychedelics and such. Have you done the DMT?
No, I've been waiting to get it. I put out some feelers recently to people that my friend had some, and then he said he got rid of it.
But, I'm interested.
Yeah, I want to know what it's like. Because I hear stories from people, and then it's like, eh, I don't know.
I've heard so much from the guys about it.
Yeah.
Maybe talk to Eddie about it a little bit again.
To Eddie? Okay, I'm going to play this thing.
All right.
If you want me to stop it, I can just stop it at any point.
Oh, well, God, just, you are a powerful man.
Like, just put your hand up or something.
Okay.
So this is when he's going in.
Where are we, Tibet?
I guess somewhere like that. Oh, I got to raise this volume.
It's beautiful. Oh,
no. Is this going to have music over the whole thing?
It seems like you downloaded the wrong one.
Broken Rhythm. Absolutely downloaded the wrong
you
one.
You downloaded like a rave dance.
Game Bruce of Death. Lee. Broken right?
Broken Rhythm must be some raver bullshit.
Oh, here we go. Nunchaku playing.
I feel like we should limit ravers on the internet in some
way. Okay, here. This is what he's doing. He just threw away. He had a stick from the floor below.
Yep, I see that.
And he's fucking chucking it. I got to raise his volume so we can do it. So it picks it up.
I like the noises Bruce Lee makes. That's my favorite part of Bruce Lee is the noise. God, that he's stuff? Magical.
Okay.
If you had to bang a guy,
yeah,
Prince or Bruce Lee,
who would I bang?
Yeah,
ooh, they're both very feminine,
right?
Bruce Lee's a masculine feminine though.
Both are. You look at you rub up against fucking the stubble that Prince has got on his face, and tell me he's not masculine.
I think that's painted on stubble. It was just fucking this guy up with a bamboo stick. Now he brings out the nunchucks.
I don't see how that guy is going to fare better.
Oh, they went stick to stick.
Nunchucka to nunchucka.
Well, this is the wrong one, too. Jesus, he's good with those nunchucks.
That guy looks good, too. But I feel like the difference is it's like a guy shadow boxing or hitting the mitts and then a guy in a fight that can put those same combinations
I bet
together.
That other guy's one of the best in the world at nunchucks. Yep. And I bet that's who Bruce Lee got. Oh, he fucking hit him.
And then he goes, oh, my. Oh. Say something again.
Asshole.
Say something again.
That's my favorite. He wants to talk shit about it after he got one blow in.
Say something.
Here it is again. He smiled and he smashed him right in the
face.
That
is amazing.
Oh, man, I want to see what that's the fucking...
Oh, that's Dan Inosanto, bro.
Where?
Bruce Lee versus Dan Inosanto. Dan Inosanto is a real master. He's one of his only surviving students, I think. He's got a place down on the beach.
Really?
And he is a boss. Like, he's an original boss stick fighter, Jeet Kune Do guy.
Oh, he's killing that other dude. I want to know... Oh, that's him, right?
Yeah, that's Master Dan Inosanto.
Oh, because Bruce Lee comes up. Somebody just killed somebody. I want to see the fucking nunchucks shit.
Here we go.
Man, this game, this movie was fucking really good. Okay, so now he's taking the stick.
He's got a stick.
He's giving the nunchucks to the other guy to hold.
Oh, please, guys.
He just holds a bamboo shoot. God, that's cool. And that guy has two sticks. So this is the kind of stick fighting you would do?
Yep. And the two sticks is like Krabi Kabrong, like out of Thailand is where that art comes from. And one stick is like Salat or Kali.
Okay.
This bamboo is longer. More flexible. and very much alive. And when your flashy routines cannot keep up with the speed and the elusiveness of this thing here, all I can say is you're going to be in deep trouble.
The guy says,
that we will have to find out.
Bruce Lee doesn't cuss.
No.
No need to.
He tells him what he's going to do. And is he explaining to other people right now, by the way? Like, about fighting in general? His movie just telling other people about the theories of fighting?
He was such an original.
Now he's copying that guy's thing with the bamboo.
Oh, God, he's evil. He's an evil little... look at him.
That's those noises.
It's like fighting a little cricket.
I'm telling you, it is difficult to have a rehearsed routine to fit in with our own broken rhythm.
Hold on. He's learned English for this, huh?
I believe so.
Because that's not dubbed over. That's his
right.
That's his mouth yep. moving at the words.
Yep. And he was one of the first Chinese guys. You think about this time, like... Bruce Lee and Richard Pryor, man, they broke racism. Really, in a big way, because there weren't films. I mean, Dean Martin or who was it? Jerry Lewis?
Yeah.
Remember all the Jerry Lewis shit?
Yeah.
Where he's pretending to be Japanese and shit, and all that yeah. racist ass shit he did? He was like the fucking first amazing racist, the asshole. Yeah.
Me so horny.
And then Richard Pryor making fun of how ludicrous racism was.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're the first guys that really broke those kinds of social ideas open where everybody could laugh at it and agree that it's ridiculous. Now, Bruce Lee went against his own people. They hated him.
Why?
Because he became a star. And they were always background people and this and that. And then he is also in his thinking, like, where he's like, you know, you're rote, like, he's making fun of katas. He's like, your kata is bullshit.
What's a kata?
Like, katas are like in Taekwondo and shit, where they go, we're going to go through this, and then we do this, oh, and like, then we yeah. do this. And it's like,
and they're somebody gives something
they're
else.
Stigmata dancing. And so he's like, you know, you can't, your kata can't keep up with our unbroken rhythm. Like, mm-hmm. my rhythm's not going to go with your kata's rhythm, and I'm going to strike you in between your rhythm. And they didn't like that, because he was like the first free fighter, you know, like Luta Livre in Brazil, like they talk about that, and you know, the original MMA guys, and the fight isn't going to be straightforward.
Exactly,
it's going to be all different angles. It's going to be awkward. It's
I remember seeing something with
and
Bruce
that was
Lee
the art of Jeet Kune Do.
Fighting with Chuck Norris, I think.
Uh-huh.
Just doing like a training, whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes, now what happens if I have you in this position? He has him all tied up.
Yeah.
Where he can't use his arms or his legs. It's on the ground. He can't. His arms are all tied up. Not tied up with rope, but tied up with.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got them all. And he goes, what would you do here? And he's like, well, there's nothing I can do here. He goes, wrong. Your teeth bite me.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? He goes, bite me. I'm right there. It's a weapon. Why not? It's yep. your only move.
Yep.
And he's like, well, that's not my training. He goes, well, it should be.
Yeah.
Why not? You're going to die otherwise. You better bite my neck.
Yeah. Yeah, he was one of the first guys to bring grappling into striking.
Yeah, he's got the reach on Dan Insanto. In those.
See? Rehearsed routines lack the flexibility to adapt.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee learned from you, maybe.
Basically.
Maybe.
Basically.
Oh, he just took
amazing.
One of this guy's sticks.
Amazing. And that's in stick fighting. What we'll do is, like, we'll hit the hand.
Do you understand?
Because the hand holds
the
weapon.
It's the first thing that's...
becomes a sword.
It's the closest...
Jesus,
it's like he's asking.
One.
It's like he's asking questions.
I
want to
hear that one again. That was such a long one. I went back too far.
Do you understand?
Do you understand? This bamboo becomes a sword.
So good.
It's so long. Oh, now he takes up the nunchucks. He's done with it, and then Bruce Lee gets rid of the. Then he goes nunchuck to nunchuck. Wow, that was good.
It's a good little scene, man.
Yeah, it is. This is the one they never finished, right?
I don't know if Game of Death was. I'm not sure.
I think he like leaving the fucking the game of like whatever the game right. place was all like after his death. I believe. I might be wrong.
Well, he, and then the whole thing about his family being cursed, like cursed by Chinese witchcraft and shit. And that's why his son got killed. No, that like the every male in his family, they said your bloodline will be stopped.
Oh, really?
And so that's what, yeah, it's a trip.
And his bloodline was stopped.
Yeah.
There's no surviving.
There's his he's got a daughter.
Well, that's not his bloodline, but his name. But you know what? Artificial insemination, she'll keep that name going.
Okay. I think she should, I mean, because they're not tall life, people, they should probably get with you.
Okay, so back.
Has anybody ever thought about buying your semen?
I pretty much just give it away willingly, constantly. So.
I feel like it's not a highly tradable item.
If you could just sieve it from the belly buttons of women, you could find it.
What's your book you're reading there?
This?
Yeah.
This is a book I put your notes in.
Oh, interesting.
I've written notes for this. I write notes for the podcast questions I want to ask.
Do you write notes every time we get off the phone with each other?
No.
Oh.
Because we never get off the phone with each other.
Do you enjoy my beard?
It's okay. I noticed it when you came in.
You like it?
Let's get back to fucking stunt work for a second. So how much does it pay?
It's
what's like normal
you
amount,
start off,
top end?
You start off,
end?
It's a regular SAG contract, right? So like whatever that is, if you're on a 1 day or a 3 day or a week long contract, they're all different.
What's a week long contract?
Well, you're in the Brotherhood of the Guild.
Screen Actors Guild. So you get paid as a Screen Actors actor?
Yeah, you got to be a screen yeah.
But exactly. I've never worked on movies. I don't know what
And so like what's a weekly? It's I don't know, 3,300 or something like
okay.
that.
That sounds about right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And you get the plus 10%, like what your agent would get, how they get whatever plus 10%. Yeah. You get that yourself cuz you've hustled your own work.
Oh, you've become your own agent.
Right. So so that's what you would get, and then like you get
Do they have agents for this sort of thing?
No.
It's not even a position.
No, it's like there's so many people are like, dude, I want to act or I want to do this or that, and it's like, well, you gotta have a SAG card. And then people think, god, if I get the SAG card, that'll be like Valhalla. And it's like, how many guys do you know with a SAG card that will never work ever again? It's just like, you gotta work your ass off to book jobs. So
like 3,300 a day is like 500.
A day is 880, I think.
Okay.
And so if you call me I just did In Plain Sight, USA Network mega hit. I think I probably took them over the edge. They might even get another season out of it because of my performance. But so I've got
TV pay different than movies?
Yeah, it just but like $100 or something.
Does commercials pay different than?
Well, yeah, the residuals on commercials are that's the shit, right?
Wait, you get residuals for stunt work?
Oh yeah.
Do you get that for the movies also?
Yeah,
at a certain percent, not the same percentage as Tom Cruise would get, but like.
Well, I mean, he's a producer.
But like basic SAG, like
he's a producer. You're aware of the difference between a producer and a performer?
But if you're a performer, I mean, whatever. But if you work as like pizza delivery guy 1 week on a SAG shoot,
yeah, I'll have fucking residuals forever.
Residuals, but you get residuals.
But check it out. Like I was just on that Arnold movie, and I was on for like 6 weeks or whatever for a huge run of the show.
Yeah.
Like there's, and I don't know what the breakoffs are. Like if you make, there's different percentages you get.
Yeah.
Residually. And it's like it depends how many stunt guys worked on the movie because it's all split up in a pie. And then there's above and below. There's above and below the line.
So they have 100% of the stunt work money. So if they have 50 stunt workers, it's less than if they have 2 stunt workers.
I think so.
Okay.
But then also, if you make over $25,000 in the movie, you're in the highest. You're going to make the most residuals you can make for that film. Versus if you're underneath a certain number, you're going to make a certain amount of residuals, but it's not going to be as high. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you and I are both stuntmen. And I work for 2 weeks, and you work for 8 weeks. Your residuals are going to be higher, commensurate to the amount of
percentage
money you made.
Percentage or total?
Percentage wise.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I believe that's how it works.
And then you can't work every single day.
Well, I mean, it depends what.
I mean, you could, but like it's
like.
Hard to get work. It's a freelance job.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of movies. Like I just worked on this other thing with the McLovin character.
Yeah. Well, like today is a Thursday or Wednesday or whatever day it is.
And I worked 3 days on it, and that's it.
With the guy, with McLovin?
Yeah, but like that's the, you know what I mean?
It's done. Yeah.
And then it's done. Or maybe.
And then you go another 2 weeks before you get another job.
Yeah, you know.
And that might be a 2 month job.
Right.
Where you get bank.
Yep.
So it is, you have to keep hustling to get
you're
jobs.
You're hustling all the time.
I
it's like that,
I started
it's like that feeling of like, you know how it is, like where you're working a job and you're like, you quit that job or you fucking get fired or whatever and you're like, fuck, you know, I've got enough money to pay the rent, but then by the time I get my next job, it's going to be, they're going to wait 2 weeks before I get my first paycheck, and then I'm just barely going to make rent for the next month or whatever, you know what I mean? And it's like, yeah. You're in that fear place, kind of like, I got to find a job to be, I live there. I'm in that space all the time,
no
trying
security
to find a job.
At all.
You know, no.
People don't understand that.
But
it's
there's
like
an illusion of security and other shit. You know, if you're a fucking, you know, there's no security anywhere. People are getting married to find security. They're trying to sign up. You know, they took everybody's pension away in Detroit. That used to be security. There's no security anywhere. Yeah. You know, there's this illusion of security. So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to live like an animal, do what I want to do, and have fun.
If my friend who works for the government in D.C., or used to, if he's like, oh, I'm broke, I can't go out this week, because but next week I will be getting a paycheck, and I know exactly how much it's going to be for.
Yep.
Whereas any one of my or your paychecks might be your last paycheck you see ever.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, so it's about that much. And then now let me ask you a question about the – I forgot.
Oh, no, wait. What? But then you get what's called stunt adjustments.
What is that?
So if we're in a fight scene out here on the balcony –
yeah.
And I fall off into the lower part of the projects here, like a story.
Not projects. One of the safest neighborhoods in L.A.
And so, you know how they film everything from different angles, and they film it 15 times? So maybe I have to fall 15 times.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the coordinator says, dude, I gave you a $1,500 adjustment today.
What?
And so,
why?
And so if we go into overtime, too, it's awesome. So then on my $880 a day, which is my rate, add that $1,500 on it.
Whoa.
And now I'm at a $2,200 rate or whatever it is.
And then do you charge that rate next time?
No. But then that rate, when I go into time and a half after 8 hours, it's off of that
based on
rate.
That rate.
Yeah.
So you get $2,300 time and a half.
And then I go into double time and a half. Yeah. It's fucking.
And what's time and a half? This, people don't understand. It's the best. My first commercial, I did a Kia commercial.
Right.
And we got to go to Monument Valley. They flew me out to where the what's it called is the what is that place called?
Death Valley.
No, in Utah, and it's one of the great wonders of the world. You can take a mule all the way down there.
One of the seventh.
Yeah. What is?
I don't know because I'm not
interested. Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And we were shooting all around there.
Uh huh.
But there'd be days I didn't understand this. Like you get an 8 hour day and it pays $560.
Uh huh.
And then
commercials are different.
Yeah, from 8.5 hours to 10.5 hours, you get time and a half.
Yeah.
Which is like, what do you mean? You should you for $560 for a day, you get me all day long.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever the fuck you want. I'll suck dick. I don't give a fuck.
I'm in.
But then they have to give you time and a half until 10.5 hours, and then from 10.5 on, you get to get double time.
Right.
So per hour, it ends up being, and then there comes a thing where if you haven't had enough rest, you need 12 hours of off time until you shoot again.
Right. Yeah.
So if you haven't,
you start off at
time and a half until you reach the actual. So then they pay you time and a half for Saturday, double time for Sundays. So there's a point where I was making like $6 a minute.
Yeah.
And I was the Jew in me, as I'm waiting to shoot.
I love that.
Waiting for 4 hours to shoot.
You've tightened it up to the minute.
Uh-huh. And I'm like, another minute went by, I just made $6.
Yeah.
It was so good. And they gave you per diem. And you're like, but you're feeding me.
So awesome. Well,
and then
how about meal penalties?
Oh, yeah.
If you're not sitting down for a meal or they break you late, every 15 minutes they owe you another $125 or something
and
like that.
And if they haven't, then they owe you this money. But it's like, but you fed me all day long. In between the 6 hours, you can go to the craft food guy and
all day.
Hey, make me a quesadilla.
Yeah.
Make me a taco.
Yep.
You can say please or you cannot say please. It's up to you. And they're going to make
you know what you can't do?
What?
You cannot tip him.
Oh, yeah. They don't take any money. They just made Twizzlers galore, and then they had to pay. Oh, sorry, it's 6 hours and 30 minutes since your last meal. Like one, I only eat every 8 hours anyway.
Right.
Two, I've eaten 9 times in the last 4 hours.
I'm bloated.
Yeah, I don't want to eat anyway.
It's so good.
That's my only advice I give to people when they're doing their first commercial. I'm like, here's the deal: the night before, you want to pretty much fast, and then in the morning when you wake up, you want to take like 6 or 7 peanuts, just something to get your metabolism
working. You're hilarious.
So you'll be super so you're super hungry because the meals they give you are so fucking delicious.
It's good too, yeah. Good meat.
New York skirt steak and salmon and like
lobster
it's
I've
so
had.
Goddamn good.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Yep.
And so you eat all that shit too, right? When you're on sets?
No, I'm careful about what I eat because I got to perform or I got to be in a tight harness or something like that.
Oh.
So I keep my diet really good all the time.
What if you're like, all right, Tate, you're broke. Let's go to lunch. You'll pound it then. Oh, no, because you still have to eat, right?
Yeah. I mean, I eat, I'll stuff myself on meat and vegetables. Yeah. I'll stuff myself.
Yeah. You just won't eat carbs.
But if I have to do something, vegetables are carbs.
Vegetables are not. Are they really?
What are they? There's carbs, fats, and proteins. What are vegetables? Where do they fall in your Jew category?
Hold on. Let me think.
Okay.
I'm going to ignore the hostile tone.
I'll give you a minute.
What are the three categories again?
Carbs.
Carbs. What else?
Fats.
And proteins?
Mm-hmm.
Well, beans have proteins in them, but they also have carbohydrates.
Are we talking about beans?
Vegetables.
Uh-huh.
They're legumes. So they're carbs? So if you eat broccoli, that's a carb?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought that was carb-free. So you can't eat broccoli and shit?
I do eat broccoli.
Oh, okay, just certain types of carbs.
You're the one that wanted me to not eat carbs. Yeah. I love broccoli.
Well, for the longest time, when I ever went to fucking get
love broccoli,
I was like, can I get it without the bun and just straight? What's in your chili?
But I don't.
Cumin. If it has cumin, I can't eat
but
it.
But I don't eat grains.
Oh, grains. That's the bad part.
But then if you don't eat bread, people think the only thing that carbs are is bread because they're fucking
bread and pasta.
Stupid people.
Starch,
that you always have
starches.
To educate.
That's what you stay away from. Starch.
Starches, yeah, sure.
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Well, that's true. When you say I don't know,
that's
I believe
true.
You.
I wish I could fire you in some way.
I know.
Okay, let's get back to the fucking stomach. Have you ever gotten broken anything?
No.
You haven't?
I got flashed unconscious for just a second once. I came down hard on top of a bus.
Oh, really?
But that was it.
Because you're sort of guessing. As you're coming down, you're like...
Well, you know what's interesting about it?
Like, how do you train to fall the right way?
With fights?
Yeah.
Is super interesting because I go into a fight and I know there's this potential for this kind of damage and that, you know, whatever. Cuts, leg bruises, yeah. You know, you're going to have, maybe knocked out, whatever. But you don't know what's going to happen and maybe none of that happens.
Right.
Maybe just walk through a guy.
Yeah.
So there's that, right? And so you don't even, you're walking into an accident environment, but you don't know if there's going to be an accident. But in stunts, I know exactly what the accident's going to be. I know where it's going to end up, and I know what's going to hurt.
Right.
And I'm willingly walking into where it's going to hurt. It'd be like willingly walking into a cage and going, okay, I'm going to go ahead and accept 3 head kicks or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, you know that that's going to happen. You're like, okay, you're looking at a steel escalator and you're like, I have to somersault shoulder roll down onto the front thing from 6 feet high and I'm going to fall and I'm going to roll all the way to the bottom. That's going to hurt every fucking step of the way.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's a trip. So there's a huge difference in that, but I don't know. It's all exciting, and I like any performing, even just like commercials and stuff I've done with no stunt.
Yeah, it's sort of fun.
Nothing. It's like when somebody says go, and you have to perform, and all this money and all this time, and it's all on you right now to make it work.
Yeah,
dude, that's huge, and it's that adrenaline that
it is
fucking,
adrenaline
that I fucking love, dude. I get off on it, and it's the same as fighting, dude. Like what you do, like for years watching.
You don't know
you guys,
how it's gonna go.
Having the luck of watching you guys on stage, I would just sit in awe, like mesmerized. First, I like really not with you so much because you're so good, but like with open micers for sure.
I thought you were going to say because you're terrible, I can learn nothing from you.
like open micers are like...
open micers are really interesting
so
to watch.
So courageous, dude. It's like...
They're so fearful.
If anybody has never done it, to go out and watch those people...
I love watching open micers. Early, first, second,
you're just watching
time.
All heart. Like Gabe Killian, I watched that kid go and I was just like... God damn, man. I'm such a fan. Like, just it's so brave to do. But then you watch people that are really good at it. And then, like, when you go, like, you've got a great skill with it. And then you go try new stuff out and how it's kind of new all over again and all that. But, like, when the lights are on and it's your time and you're controlling this and this, like, when it's go time, man, it's like, that's like a fight.
Yeah,
like, you're in
like,
there like a fight.
Gonna happen.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing, like, being funny. Like, I can be funny when you and I are hanging out on a drive to the airport or whatever. Yeah. But, like, to go and go...
Which you'll never, ever get again, by the way. Just so you know, that
you
was...
You need to have this contrived experience on stage that you're going to set up, and you need to lead into it and have your own setups and make
in
it work, and you're by yourself.
Sort of way.
And it has to all look natural. Like, when I'd watch guys and they'd laugh at cues in their own jokes, and the first time you see them, you're like, oh, that's authentic laughter. It's all genuine and everything else. And it's like, none of it is.
Yeah.
It's all made up.
Yeah. Well, there's degrees. There's like,
it's amazing.
There's like sometimes you'll laugh at something, but it's like you're in a good mood and you're gonna allow yourself to laugh at the parts you find funny.
Right.
You're just going to let yourself get into it.
But then sometimes, like, where there's a sigh or something where they're like,
oh, yeah, all cute.
Oh, and then my mom said, you know, I don't know how that's going to go. And I was like, raise your voice lower.
That's the technical stuff. Those are the technical aspects of stand-ups. Dude. That people like, the joke just wasn't funny. And you're like, you have no idea. It's because I was tired and I didn't do the sigh at the right time.
The layers that go into it, I'd go around and, I mean, well, I remember telling you and Joe and Joey this driving around somewhere one night. And I was just like, it's such a privilege to be able to watch your acts 150 times and see all the nuances. Like, my level of appreciation deepened for that art form. I was amazed because I had no idea before I knew, you know, like, you're in a crowd, you're not present.
And that's
why
people are like, I can do that.
Oh,
like,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, go for it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's such a respect for comics.
Remember,
it's phenomenal.
To have new open micers come to the store.
Yeah.
Most of them are pretty cool, but you've seen that open mic. It's a shitty show early on. Five people in the audience, 25 comics on the way back, hopefully listening and not heckling.
Right.
But these new people come and some of them have attitude. I'm like, man, I gotta rock that shit. Put me on that stage, I'll rock it. And you're like, how many times have you done comedy? He's like, man, I'm funny as shit. I'll fucking take this place by storm.
Right.
We're like, okay, the light's to the left. Don't get off until the light comes on. It's 3 minutes. And that light would never come on.
How many minutes? 3 minutes?
3 minutes. Oof. We would just leave that light off. And we would just like suffer. Suffer for your attitude.
Nobody knows what that's like under the scrutiny of their peers. And it's not even your peers because you're on stage. You don't see who's out there.
No.
You can't read their faces. Like, am I reaching these people?
Yeah.
You don't, unless they utter something, you don't know what's happening.
You have sort of darkness. You're like, if I can hear the sound of laughter, I can see the first row or two.
It's the same as like fighting and people are like, dude, I would do that. I fucking beat ass, da da da, or whatever, all this shit. And it's like, you're virtually naked. You're in your underwear in front of your mom, your family, people that hate you, fucking people that admire you, people that look up to you, your fucking coaches, your fucking students, and you're going to maybe be brutalized or brutalize somebody in the most primal way possible.
Yeah.
Like, the comedy's primal like that, I think, in that same way.
I think it was either Justin Wade or Don Richardson, but I think it might have been Don Richardson, and he was on real late at night one night, and it's dark in the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
It's one of the darkest rooms.
Yeah, you can get a hand job in there and nobody would know.
Yes, I have. I just got... I'm going to leave that story. But
you and Tebow.
Yeah, but exactly. But
he's got soft hands.
Somebody's fucking once by the piano. We had a porn star in there.
I believe it.
And her the porn star boyfriend, and they just went up to the side. Don Barris like, if you want to go over there, just go ahead and take care of business.
Awesome.
And they just fucked gently on the side.
Fucked gently.
Yeah.
You're so creepy.
And everyone just watched creepily. But anyway, this guy got off stage like late at night, 2 a.m., and it was like the last spot.
Just go
until it's like the paperwork's done. And he's like, all right, that's it. He's like, thank you guys for coming. And the lights go on.
Right.
And he looks out and no one's there.
Right.
There's literally zero people there.
Yep.
And he'd been talking to zero people for he doesn't even know how long.
Yep.
There were two when he got on, but he can't see them.
Yep.
And he's bombing, but he doesn't know. And then he just goes, when he's realized no people there, they goes, oh, man.
Yeah.
It was just such a sad, like, I've been performing for no one.
It's amazing, though. How much of that, Ari, is that you're performing for yourself?
Yeah, there's
and
a lot
like,
of that.
That. I mean, because he gained something from that, right?
I guess so.
It's hard, man. I've seen you bomb, too. Like, I'd never seen you be anything but funny before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fucking, like, gut stitches funny. And then
I bomb sometimes.
And then when I see you clam up or your head's not in the right spot or something, and you go up and I'm just like... There's nothing more uncomfortable.
I get in my head.
There's nothing more uncomfortable.
I think I can't follow some specific comic, and I'm like,
oh my God,
he talked about this. I was going to.
And you don't really do crowd work a whole lot. Like, you don't fall back.
I do it sometimes, but I've done it less.
There's things that comics fall back onto that you don't really. You just sit up there and kind of suffer through some awkward shit. Like, what's his name? The little drunk blonde kid.
Ingram.
Yeah,
drunk artist,
that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like he, it's impossible for him to bomb because he's always in his comfort of the. He's so good with the crowd work.
He's so
shit,
good
you know,
with
like
it. Yeah.
I don't. It'd be hard to see him do bad.
Yeah,
but so it's interesting. Like really good comics, it's I like, think will force themselves to do bad. It's like Jardine you brought up.
Yeah.
Like when I feel like, ooh, I'm doing kind of good against him. Yeah, you're not probably. What's happening, Tate,
is that he's
working on a three-punch combination, and he's agreed with himself silently before he went in the cage that that's the only thing he's willing to hit on you.
Yeah.
And so, like, you not resorting to crowd work is kind of like, I'm going to get some more expertise at this, however I'm going to, you know, or whatever.
I tried to record an album in October, and it didn't come out. The recording got fucked up. I'm going to do it again in Denver in
right.
2 weeks. Oh,
cool.
By the way, if anybody's listening to this, May 12th in Denver.
May 12th, Denver.
That was the first place I went on the road with you.
Comedy Works is where we did 10 Foot Screws.
10 Foot Screws, yeah.
Wow. Maybe I'll buy a wig and come up.
So we're recording this Saturday, but I'm there all weekend. But when I recorded last time, I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to bury that material. I'm just going to stop doing it. I'm going to work on new material. I had a big talk with Louis C.K. about doing that and about how it's done. And I was like, let me try it. And people are like, that's crazy. You don't get as many spots as him. You're not in the road headliner. You can't just go up three times a night in L.A., wherever you want. And I'm like, no. But artistically, let me fucking try it.
Yeah.
Let somebody just try it. And at first, it was like hard to like not do that old material. But then it became like, I'm going to go down. I'm going to bomb with this new joke that's not worked out at all. But the feeling I get from not doing well is going to drive me to write something better. And so it's like you want to like, well, let me in with an old joke that works. Like, no, don't in with an old joke that works. You know you can do that and it will go well.
Right.
So what's the point?
Right.
It's Tuesday night at the store.
It's so interesting when you disengage yourself from your job is to make the crowd happy.
Uh-huh.
Versus like you're always in there honing your skill. Yeah. That's the number one priority. It's not to please the ticket holder.
People say like it's such a good thing you're doing, making people laugh. And I'm like, and David Taylor's always said this, right? We all agree on it. He goes, oh yeah, it's great that you get laughs out of this. But if you die in a fire on the way home, I wouldn't care.
That's great.
I need the laughs. I want them. I don't care if you're getting enjoyment
from
them. I need them.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and even new material, you're trying to do it the best you possibly can.
Yeah.
You know, like hit with that three-punch combo he's trying to do. He's trying to land that on you every time.
Yep.
He just doesn't have the skills.
Yep. He just has to move. His balance has to be right and everything else.
Yeah.
What were we talking – now, what did Louis C.K. have to do with it?
Oh, well, he was doing this thing where he was doing a new special every year, which is really unprecedented. And I saw him
in
Montreal.
What's his name tried to do that, and he sucked after a while?
Who? Carlin?
No. Why would you speak ill of the dead, A?
Carlin did it well for a long time. I was going to say he did it well for – he got about 10 or 11 great albums, and then he started –
What about then he went into movies and all that. He was a Hollywood phenom for a while, and then he
he didn't do an album a year, did he?
Like an HBO one, then a Showtime one, and then
he did a few specials.
He
it
did
wasn't,
like
it wasn't
a few
year.
That were like an hour and a half. They were long.
It was every couple of years. Louis was like the first one to like consistent like every. And it's like what
it takes a long time to get that much material, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I asked him once, and I was like, you know, that's kind of unprecedented. Like we were walking from one venue to another. And I just figured I'd ask, you know? And he was like, yeah. And he just told me how he does, like, he buries everything. And he goes, if you couldn't do your material anymore,
what would you do?
He goes, would you stop being a comic? Or would you write new material?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wouldn't stop being a comic. He goes, yeah, you wouldn't. So just make yourself stop doing that material and you'll do new material.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, you take it for granted. Like, this guy blows up like Eddie Murphy with one of his first albums or whatever. And you're like, because he'd been working on that for 20 years.
Exactly.
And then we saw it on HBO.
But I'll tell you this.
But then after that, to do it again, it's like he doesn't have 20 years
That's
of material now. Now is when, who are you now?
They said Dennis Miller's second album suffered from that. And a lot of second albums suffer from that.
Dice Clay. Andrew Dice Clay had some really funny shit.
Next year's 2 years worth of stuff.
Yeah.
It's not as good.
Yeah.
Whittled down to an hour. But I'll tell you this. I'm going to record this whatever in 2 weeks, whatever it is, May 12th. But then I've already got 35 minutes of that newer stuff built up. So I'm going to record again in October. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the year and just record.
Have you ever done all your older stuff, like the fucking, you know, buying $48 worth of drinks for that bitch and like that, like all that stuff? Have you gotten all that on a CD?
No.
See, I think before you move forward or at some point, it's
well, that's
worth,
what I was going to do with this first CD.
It's worth chronicling all that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's why I want to do it. I'm like, here's I compare it to like a painter.
Like, put that in your archive.
Painting something for 6 months and then burning it.
Yeah.
Like, no, put it in a museum or sell it to somebody.
That's what I'm saying. Until it's documented, don't move on.
Well, some of those stuff I did on like HBO Canada, and I was like, good enough. It's on the internet.
That's on Canada, though. Come on.
But it's on the internet. Like, you can find
it. Are we Americans or are we not?
We are Americans.
Okay, well, thank you.
Canadians are kind of Americans, too.
Let's stop that. No, they're a parking lot for America. They're a parking lot and a breeding ground for hockey players, let's be honest. There are some nice strippers, though, in Canada.
Oh, God, yeah. Actually, I don't really know. I haven't been to that many strip clubs in Canada.
Some nice ones.
Portland has some nice strippers, too.
Portland. Yes. They have a lot. What they make up for, what they lack in quality, you know, they make up for in quantity.
Okay, so what happens when you do hurt yourself?
You hide it.
You hide it as best you can.
Yep.
But if you have a full break of an arm, you can't.
Well, then
hide
you
it.
Have to go and take care of that.
And now, do you have to lose the job after that, or do you get paid out?
Depends.
On who the
Yeah, I'm sure that, like I said, I don't have all that experience with it, but some scenarios that would happen is be like, dude, we have this other big thing and we can't hide your arm under a jacket, because guys would work with a broken arm or whatever, whatever. It's not a big deal.
Hide under a jacket.
If you could hide it.
Yeah.
But if you can't, we got to get another guy to do it, you know, and that's understandable.
You don't get paid. You don't have a contract.
And then you don't, you know,
and that's what you get paid for, the hazard pay, is because you might fuck yourself and not be able to work.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I remember the one time I had to do stunt driving.
Uh-huh.
It was for that Kia commercial.
Right.
And they were like, they had another stunt driver, and it wasn't even that hard, but it was like they had a camera in the middle of the road in Outback, Utah, or Arizona, and you had to drive right by it with the director of photography, his eye to the fucking camera.
Wow.
So if it hit him, it's
not even
smash
a remote control
face.
Camera.
No.
Wow.
And so he's staring at, and they make me drive, and they're like, drive by it, I drove by it by like 8 feet away. They're like, no, get like a foot to a half foot away. I was like, are you crazy?
But yeah, and that, and that's, right. And that's the head game. Anybody can do that. Like when I'm looking at a fight, yeah, I'll do that. Or when you're looking at somebody drive, but you've driven on Sunset before and stayed within the lines.
Yeah,
that's kind of what they're asking you to do.
I know.
Except
but,
now there's a human life. So
but
now
I go over the lines a lot.
Now that the odds are up, that everybody's looking at you, and there's, you know, it's like
I would get to like within like 40, 50 feet, and then I'd veer off away.
And that's the difference of a professional.
I couldn't hang the chicken thing in. Yeah, the professionals can hang in.
That's I got control of my nerves. I've got control of myself, so that regardless of the storms that are happening around me, I'm in a place of placidity and serenity that I'm going to be able to perform. I will perform under that pressure.
And that's training, and he's done this
and that's
before.
Just from, and it's, I'm a competitor.
Like, but then sometimes shit goes wrong.
Well, sure. But you make sure that that's outside. It's like Randy Couture said once. He says, yeah, there's guys that are younger. There's guys that are this or that. Maybe the guy I fight, he's got better skills. Maybe he's stronger. But he says, what I have complete dominion over is coming in with good cardio and being in good health. Yeah. I have complete dominion over that. And so I come in and I take care. I control what I can. And outside stuff, whatever. I do the best I can around it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's life. There's a lot of people that are, you know, pediatricians or whatever, and then there's people that are fucking brain surgeons.
Right, and you're like,
you know,
I can do that.
That's a huge difference in your skill set. And
it's
like
a good friend of mine, he had to do brain surgery the first time, and the person was bleeding out, and he said, he started counting to five, and he said, I'm gonna let the fear come in until I'm done counting to five. This friend of mine, and then after that, I'll be able to push it out
and
then do my
it.
Job. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know who that friend was?
Who?
Jack from Lost.
You're
actually
hilarious.
Now that I think about it, it's not a friend of mine. Okay, a few more questions.
And he's not really a doctor.
Oh yeah, good point.
Go ahead.
Are there chicks that do?
Yeah.
Do you ever play a chick? Is that something that happens also?
Well,
do men play women for stunts?
I'm 6'3" and 235 pounds, mm-hmm. so I haven't.
But if you're inside a bus, can you just put a wig on? Do they do that?
Yeah,
or do they not?
There's that stuff has happened.
Is there that is done?
Yeah.
Because that guy who had to drive the car for the other shots, he just had to wear my hoodie.
Yeah.
And they was like, all right, you're going to play Ari.
Yeah, that's a double.
Yeah.
Right.
But he would do the stunt driving also, except for that one scene. But okay, so the women on the sets too.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of fucking going on?
Between who?
Between the stunt workers.
No.
There's not?
Mm-mm.
Is there any fucking going on? Not, I'm not talking about you specifically, but in general. Is there fucking going on between stunt guys?
In the
guys,
world, there's a lot of fucking in the world.
Stunt guys and other people on the set. Like, on sets, when you're on location somewhere.
People on sets, I mean, they've got to be on location with somebody. There's not a lot of those lines that get crossed.
Okay,
I mean,
but actors fuck each
there's
other.
There's stuff that happens.
Actors fuck each other all the time.
They are disgusting. Yes. They're grotesque.
And never like stunt.
All you guys that are out there that are looking at actresses going, ooh, I really like. She's grosser than the grossest girl that you went to high school with.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Actors? Actresses?
Actors. And actors.
What do you
mean
gross and the grossest
actors
girl?
Actors are
kind
of gross people anyway.
Wait.
Just their behavior, their sense of entitlement.
Wait, what did you just say?
Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. They're horrible to hang out with.
Horrible.
Actresses are the worst. And you know what I've realized? There's plenty of girls that are actresses that never went into acting, but they have all the characteristics of an actress.
That's true.
You know,
it's like those people. It's like those people that
dramatic.
They think very highly of themselves for no good reason.
For no good reason. It's like reality show stars. Like, you know what I've done? Like, you've done nothing.
Yeah. You're embarrassing on TV.
They give you a line
awesome.
2 minutes before you said it.
Yeah.
You're a fake reality show person.
So good.
I worked so hard. What? You show up when they ask you.
Who are you dating nowadays? Anybody?
A few people.
Do you have a special lady?
Not like one in particular, but like there's a few that I like.
Now, when you were married, you lived here with that lady?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, here's a caricature of the two of us I just took down off the behind this Velvet Elvis painting.
She has way nicer boobs in the caricature.
Than the caricature or in the caricature?
The caricature, she's a lot hotter.
Her boobs look way better in real life.
I never saw them.
Oh, they were awesome.
I've seen all your genitalia, but none of hers.
They were so good. And like the perfect kind of milky and like,
I can't imagine why she left.
Full.
Looking around.
No, it was clean when she was here.
Oh, you have plastic. You have paper bowls on your shelf. I see. That's nice.
Would you quit it? The attacking. That's not what this podcast is about. I've already done it about how sloppy I live.
What's with the Japanese fetish you have here?
Oh, I went to Vancouver and they had all those Japanese.
Oh, they love Japanese up there.
Yeah. Yep. And so I went to this place. I bought a shitload and I filled up my arms.
These are like gummy bears.
Yeah.
Are they as
individually
good?
Wrapped. Oh, yeah. They're delicious. And they taste like this one's. I don't know what.
What fruit that's
like
supposed to be.
Gummy,
but
they have grape gummy and they have mangosteen gummy. What's a mangosteen?
That's a Jew mango.
I guess so. Yeah. Anyway, I dumped this whole arms full onto the counter and this lady in broken English goes, you like gummy? I was like, what? Oh, yes, I like gummy. Yes.
No, I hate these. Yeah. I'm trying to save other people from having to eat this shit.
Them. I kept taking one more. I was like, okay, do you learn those jobs, like the falling off the roofs and the driving? Do you learn those as you go from other people? Like, teach me how to do that? Or like, how do you get it? Because day one, you're not trained in that.
I think all of us come from a highly athletic background.
That helps.
And then you try to, then you keep practicing that. I mean, for me, it's like I practice falls and I practice gymnastics and I stay, okay. You know, I continue to train jiu-jitsu. And
I remember an old Star Trek
kickboxing.
Episode where one of the guys who was not like a regular was on an away party with him. And obviously he was going to die. It was like an old joke with people. But like, He was too unready, and Captain Kirk had to be like, no, you don't understand. When you fall, you got to roll through it. Otherwise, you're taking all the force on your shoulder, and it just hurts.
Right.
And he would push the guy down, he'd get hurt, and then Kirk would just roll and come up.
Right.
But like, someone has to teach you those things, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I've been doing that for fucking years.
Okay. But you haven't been jumping from a roof.
No, but it's like, you know, when I learned how to snowboard, and people are like, dude, you can't fall and post out. I'm like, who in the fuck falls that way to where they'd break their wrist? I would never fall that way because I'm a fighter.
Oh, right.
And that's not how I, you know, I keep my elbows in and I'm going to roll through it and I'm going
to,
you know what I mean? It's like,
duck your shoulder.
For me, it's like my skill set, my body is athletically trained to the point where, like, of course I know how to fall. I know how to access a wall, or you know what I mean? It's like, you just.
Do you ever do anything with fire?
I did. I got lit on fire. Just part of me, but doing a safety thing, and we filmed some of it. It was cool.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, all that stuff is a whole different skill, you know?
You know what I used to do in Israel? I'm remembering this now.
Masturbate?
Oh, yeah.
The girls are amazing in Israel.
Yeah, the Israeli girls are a whole different type of Jew girl.
Yeah.
It's a whole
aggressive
different
and just thirsty for jizz.
And big boobs.
Is what I heard.
And they all go to the army, so they're like...
Now, how come they're all hot there, but they all dress up like they're from 1840 in Los Angeles?
Those are Hasidic Jews. That's different.
That's a horrible, whatever race of Jew that is, that's some...
It's 16th century Polish nobles, just
it's
so you know.
It's amazing. Well, that's what the furry fuzzy hat's about.
Uh-huh.
Dude,
they're dressed up like 16th century Polish nobles.
Why are they doing that?
Because at the time, in the 16th century,
right,
they were like, we should treat ourselves with like, we should walk around like just nicer. And
okay.
Like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
now
like,
you look Amish.
Styles change.
Now you look Amish.
It's been 500 years. Styles have changed.
Now how about this? They're trying to keep it real like that with that shitty woolen black clothing and a shitty hat.
Yeah.
What's with the fucking Bluetooth they got in their ear?
Oh, right. Exactly.
You know what I mean? You look like a retard.
Well, that's to sell and buy diamonds.
Okay.
But this is what we did. Where I'd see a bunch of people like in the kibbutz we were staying at.
At a whaling wall?
What?
At the whaling wall?
No, just on kibbutz Lavi. It's a place in Tiberias.
Kibbutz.
Tiberias.
I thought that was like what you did, like if you're fidgeting, kibbutzing.
Kibbutz, that's talking.
Okay.
Close. But,
all right.
Anyway, and
I'm Jewish.
I spray off all of my jeans, like bug spray or Lysol.
Oh, yeah.
And I have somebody post it up behind a bush with the people that were hanging out,
right.
Like over there 20 yards away. Couldn't see, like he'd be behind this box over here. And so I'd walk by him, like walk by this guy, and the people, I'd be like, hey, everybody. I'd get their attention before I walk by the bush.
How old are you?
He would just have a lighter.
How old are you?
At the time, I was 18. So but now I'm 38 and I still enjoy it. And he would just light my jeans on fire.
Uh-huh.
And it would just, the off would just catch right after I got everybody's attention. And I'd be like, oh my God, oh my God, what is that? And I just spin and roll. And people would be like, what the you just spontaneously combust?
It's so good.
It's so fucking fun. You got to try it.
Now, did you ever do that?
Right now. Yeah.
Did you ever do that and then act like, oh, doesn't even hurt at all, as if you were the savior?
No, I should have done that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But the problem is, after about 7 seconds of lighting up your jeans, it would start to get real hot.
Now, that's the thing, too, and it stays hot after the flame is out.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about how fire moves. Like, if you have a steel pipe,
yeah,
and you have a torch and you light one end of it,
yeah, the other.
When you take the torch off, it will get, after the flame is gone, it will get 40% hotter still. The flame, the heat of it will magnify even after the source of the heat is gone.
Wow.
And so that's why they say when you're on fire and you have gel on or whatever, your clothes are on fire, by the time you start feeling it, when you start feel it warm, you need to put it out, because if you wait until I can't really stand anymore, it's going to cause third degree burns now.
Wow.
Because
that's something they had to teach you.
Yes. You have.
Because if they didn't, you'd be like, I'll just wait till it gets warm.
But I take it upon myself to learn that. I mean, or you have a good stunt coordinator that's going to be helpful. But I took like a fire course to learn that. I went to Rick Siemens and I took a driving course. I learned how to fucking power slide a car around. I learned how. Yes, it's a horrible name. But you know what I mean? It's like, so part of it is on me, like, how useful can I become?
Yeah.
For the guy that I want to do the job for. You want to be the most useful guy possible.
And you don't want to get hurt. Now, right. Let me ask you a question. When that guy died recently,
mm-hmm.
how much did that shut down? Like, I want to know how much respect they have for stunt work. Like, how much did that shut down filming?
I wasn't there. But I bet they filmed the next day.
Just, they have to keep going. They got a budget and a job.
Yeah. I was watching Terry Crews' Twitter, and he didn't mention a thing about it. It just, and he was on the show, you know? It just kept going.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
I mean, what are you going to do? Shut down forever?
It's got to be gutting for the whole.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be one of the most horrible things ever, you know? And
I mean, they do this in sports, too. If somebody dies, like Hank Gathers died, it's like, well, we got a game in 2 days. We're not going to not play. Life goes on.
Yeah. And then at a certain point, you know, with productions and stuff like that, my mom was talking about that show Luck that's on HBO.
Uh-huh. I haven't seen it, but it seems cool.
It's about like horse races and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she says, God, it's so awesome. And they're not going to do another show. And I said, why not? She said, well, because a couple horses died. And she said, but they always die. Like, I guess they just ran a derby and they die. Those racehorses die a lot, yeah. I guess, you know?
Well, if they break a leg, then they die.
And so,
shoot them in the head.
So a couple of them died during the filming of the show. And she said, so they just decided to not do the show. I said, Mom, they didn't decide to not do. I said, who, like Petta or somebody? When after, she says, well, I don't know. I think they just stopped. They didn't want to. I was like, they don't care if people die. Like, they, those producers,
they
don't
stopped doing the show because they got canceled.
Give a fuck.
People weren't watching.
Like, somebody either wasn't watching or they were getting sued to a point where they had to shut down production.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, that horse died probably before the first episode aired.
Yeah, it could be.
So it's like, they kept going and they aired them thinking they were going to go. Yeah, I love the stories. They change.
Yeah.
This is my favorite Hollywood story.
People think there's humanity.
Some manager told me this.
There's humanity between us. But in the construct of the mechanism that is the, there's none.
But I love how they just make shit up. Like, oh, I heard the show stopped because they killed a horse. And like, what kind of story are they spinning?
Right.
This is the story I heard, the first story. Remember when Martin Lawrence dehydrated and was running around with a gun naked?
Yeah.
Some manager told me, he's like, Ari, have you ever been dehydrated before? I was like, yeah, sometimes, a little bit. He goes, what kind of reactions do you have usually? I'm like, I just get lackadaisical and I just don't want to move. He goes, yeah, you ever run around outside with your clothes off with a gun? And I was like, no. He goes, that's because when you get dehydrated, it's not because of crack. That's a crack situation. Hilarious. They have to spin so everyone will forgive him, so Martin wants to keep doing movies.
Or who knows what it was. You know, like,
it's look, drug. It ain't dehydration.
How about what Dave Chappelle had to say about it?
About
Did
what?
Did you see him on Inside the Actor's Studio? He had a great piece on there.
About Martin Lawrence?
And he says it was when he went to Africa.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, so, you know, and what's the guy's name that runs that show?
Neil Brennan?
Inside the Actor's Studio.
Oh, yeah.
Really nice older guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, so, you know, he's like, hey, man, sometimes niggas just need Africa. You know, you need Africa. He says, they say, here's $50 million or whatever the number was. It was a huge number. Mm-hmm. And he says, and people come out of the woodwork and there's this and that and people are clamoring.
There's
war sides that are getting fucking drawn and battle lines. And he's like, it's just fucking too much. And people are saying this about you and that about you. And I'm like, this is fucking going to go to Africa, man. Like, I want to go where nobody knows me. And I'm just going to get away from all this madness that all this money and fame has all these sycophants that are clamoring all around me. And I just need to get off of it. And so I went to Africa, you know. And sometimes everybody needs Africa, you know. And they said, and
that's Martin Lawrence's Africa.
And he says, you know what the most dismissive thing they say about you is?
What?
They said that I'm crazy. Oh, he went crazy and he went to Africa. And he said, they say that about Mariah Carey when she comes on and she went crazy and she went on whatever that MTV show was. Or they say that about Martin Lawrence. Oh, and he went crazy. And he says, you know, and I don't know about those personal people's struggles, but I know about mine. And I got a place in Pennsylvania on a farm where I live with my family. I come to L.A. now and then. And I'd like just to offer for people's consideration that maybe the construct of this town.
Yeah.
Has unhealthy. People in a whole different way, and it causes reactions like
it's
that
weird when everybody,
where everybody
yes,
needs
man,
to Africa in a way. And so fucking Martin Lawrence, you know, he's a brilliant genius guy. He runs out in the street and he has a fucked up day or whatever it is, and all of a sudden he's crazy or he's this. Maybe it doesn't mean any of that. We all attribute all these meanings to it. Maybe the meaning is that the town's a little sick. And you know,
but it's making you sick too.
Put the whole thing.
Yeah.
One feeds the
like
other.
Whatever the reason.
You know?
Obviously if you're working a steel mill, you can't do crack on a Wednesday.
Guys
but like,
do.
But yeah, but I mean,
I know
it's
guys
not,
that
it's
work
not acceptable.
On, I know guys that work at the Ford plant in Detroit and fucking, you know what you can do at the Ford
Chevy
plant?
Bro.
You maybe can't get any dope on the weekends because you're not working, but Monday morning you can place bets, you can get crack, you can get blow, you can get
really?
Meth, you can get pot, you can get whatever
really?
You want,
at
and they're
the
dealing and drinking on the line while they're making your fucking car.
Wow, cool.
And it's all there. The bookies are there. The dealers are all there.
It's amazing how that happens, and American cars are still number one in the world.
Yeah. What do you drive?
I'm a Civic, dude. I'm not driving an American car until I learn how to build
one. I'm on an Infiniti
and
a Toyota.
The last one in 6 months.
Yeah, I'm not.
It's like, look, I'll support America.
You know what?
But
I just drove a Chevy Fuse. I just got back from Louisiana, and I had a rental car.
Yeah.
1,200 miles on it.
Yeah.
The tranny was burned out by the time I brought it back 4 days later.
Really?
It's like stalling in the middle of the street.
You're like, why am I supposed to support America and waste 20 grand?
It's so shitty. They had like a Tektronic shifter on it, you know, where you can manually shift through it. That's the only thing that worked. The
do,
regular
do remember
transmission.
When, remember when Toyota was having all those stuck on the Priuses, a stuck accelerator?
Yeah, yeah.
All the instances of those
right.
were the ones built in America.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
All the ones built in Japan had no problems.
I hate everybody that drives a Prius.
No, you shouldn't.
Just automatically. I think they're horrible people. They fucking look down on you because they drive their shitty car thinking they're making a bigger difference than Dow Chemical makes in a fucking day.
Yeah.
Fuck you and your pretend healthy car, you asshole.
Fuck you. Hey, I want to wrap it up, but I got to pee first.
And you got to pee first or after?
I got to pee right now. I can just pause it.
Okay.
But hey, before we pause it,
yeah,
can I say something about our sponsors?
Yeah, let's say. Who are our sponsors?
Well,
who's paying me?
I'm paying you.
Oh,
but here's
good,
who's sponsoring
good. What am
us.
I getting paid?
You're getting $50.
No. What about SAG?
What? This is not a SAG shoot.
What? This is bullshit.
This is not a SAG shoot.
We watched Bruce Lee. That was a SAG show.
I know. But that the residuals in that movie, the contract wasn't written so that you would get paid for this. It's weird.
Huh.
It's old stuff. People got screwed back then.
All right.
My two sponsors are this, and I want to know if you can help me too with this. Amazon.com and Gamefly.com.
Gamefly?
Yeah. Do you play video games?
It's better when you enunciate. When you're like gayfly.com. It's like they're like a gay show. What? Like it's Gamefly, people. Gamefly.com.
Maybe you can be my translator.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I'll mumble through it.
Yeah, Mumbles McJew over here.
If you go to gamefly.com/Ari.
Gamefly.com/Ari?
Yeah.
What can I get?
A 2-week free trial membership.
What do I get off of that? Is that like a Netflix for games?
It is almost exactly like that.
Fucking awesome. Have they typified it that way? Do they say that? Because that's a good tagline.
No, but they should. I do, because it's like, this is what it is. Gamefly.com.
I feel like I just made that up just now and should get some more money. Don't you think?
Yes, I do think.
Can you email them? Can you call the guy, Mr. Gamefly?
I'll ask.
Is
but,
that the name of the owner of the company, Gamefly?
Yeah.
It is.
It's an Armenian name, Gamefly.
Neil Gamefly?
Neil Gamefly. Okay, so this is it. So you go to Gamefly, and then this comes up.
Delivered to your door.
Congratulations, you qualify for the Ari Shaffir 15-day free trial.
What?
And then that one's checked to the bottom.
Yeah.
Free trial, 2 games out.
Okay.
So if you do that, and then cancel or not cancel.
So then what
want.
Do I have to do? I have to send the game back to them?
Yeah, when you're done with it.
I could never do that. I can't ever get to the mailbox again.
Why?
It's just hard for me. It's one of those things.
To get there to the mailbox?
It's
yeah.
hard.
Yeah, if you don't.
I didn't know your name had two Fs like that. I was always Shaffir.
Two Fs. The second F is for fuck you. I used to say that.
The first one is for finger me.
Yeah. First one's just a spelling. And then from there on, it represents things.
This is for real losers that don't do anything with their time but sit at
no,
home and
not.
Play
it's
video
people
games.
People play video
bullshit,
games.
Bullshit, because the last video game I played, I sat in my house for 38 hours before I thought, you are ruining your life.
Oh, yeah.
And then I don't play anymore, but you don't... clearly don't care about your life.
Dude, when I play a video game, I don't get shit done. I don't get work done for like 2 weeks. I'm like, I'm not going to see you guys for a little while until I finish this
game. Yeah, I stopped playing. I don't think it would be good for me.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys, if you're listening, you shouldn't probably do this. But if you're going to play video games, it's like smoking. If Marlboro were a sports guy, I'd be like, hey, smoking's really bad for you. It makes you stink, gives you premature wrinkles and cancer. But if you're going to smoke Marlboros. Yeah. Like, that's how I feel about Gamefly right now. You probably shouldn't do any of that shit or you're a loser fucking scumbag. But if you're going to do it, Gamefly.com/Ari. Yeah. That's where you want to go. All right, guys?
And if they give me that membership, if they do that two-week thing, then they pay me money.
So get the two, because what are you going to do, a month for this money? No, fuck that. I want the 15-day free trial.
You can go after that. You can do it more. You can cancel after that.
There's three little boxes you check. You just check that third one, because 15 days free, and how do you know which one is attributed to Ari? The one that says free in it. It's the only one there that says free, and that get your inner Jew on when you channel Ari in that game. All
right, that's enough. So then I make cash. I hate doing this month. And the other one's Amazon.
Amazon.com. I just ordered some MCT oil from there the other day. Yeah, one click push. I do the rapid one.
Okay, here's what you do from now on.
Okay, what I do from now on.
If you go to Amazon, go to my website first.
A lot of people from my gym order stuff from Amazon, books
Tell
and
them.
Such.
If you go to AriTheGreat.com, look.
AriTheGreat.com.
Then right to the side is this Amazon link. This is Amazon banner as soon as it loads up.
Your internet is apparently Jewish because it's not working.
Why isn't it loading instantly?
How many Jews do you think you have listening? What is this gay stuff that comes up?
It's my last podcast, gayest podcast ever.
Oh, my Lord.
Dude, this guy, Justin Martindale, is a friend of mine. He went on Grindr. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he had found in Dallas, where he does not live, he found a dude who was willing to fuck him during the day on a Wednesday or Thursday, like at 1 p.m. But before that guy got back to him, some other guy got back to him and said, I'll come over. And then he was like, oh, well, then he had to write the first guy. And the first guy's like, I don't mind. Let's have a threesome. And the second guy's like, yeah, sure, whatever. So two guys he's never met just destroyed a hotel room with the gay fuckathon at 1:30 p.m. on a Thursday.
He fucked them.
Yeah. He fucked them both.
See, that's the way the gays are. Is they're, you know, I was out with a friend of mine the other night.
They just arranged it and made it happen.
And she said, oh, look, that's a cute couple. I'm like, there's three guys there. And she's like, that's a gay couple.
That's a cute couple.
That's a gay couple. The gays, they don't give a shit. They fuck everybody.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. She's like, the only time a gay relationship gets fucked up is when they try to be monogamous with each other.
Yeah.
But as long as they're all cool, like two of those will be maybe primary partners, but there'll always be another one.
I knew a dude who said this. He goes, because people generally are tops or bottoms.
Yeah.
But this guy I knew was a top, but he wanted sometimes, just on occasion, to be a bottom.
Switched.
But his boyfriend was never a top.
Right.
So he's like, I got to stray for that.
I got to get a man to come in here.
It's like, I mean, like big boobs. I like small boobs too, but
yeah.
You only have one or the other. So look, see that thing right there? That thing?
God, I got Amazon gay. That's a big block there. The Skeptic Tank, sponsored by Price Selection Convenience Amazon. That doesn't even look like an Amazon link, though. It looks like a turd written in Japanese.
Do you think I should change it to a bigger Amazon link?
I don't know.
Because the sec for the Canadian one looks like Amazon, right?
Yeah, that one doesn't, though, right? That looks like
you're right.
It looks like a Tom Petty album.
Yeah, it looks like a UPS thing.
Something.
Anyway, if you click on it, so all you're doing is one extra step, AriTheGreat.com. And if you click on it, then it takes you to Amazon, and then you just shop.
How much money do you get from that?
I get like 2%.
2% of my purchase?
Yeah.
My purchase, 2% goes to you.
Comes out of Amazon's end. Maybe 1%? It can't be 2%. That seems so high.
Every $100, you get a dollar.
Yeah. And you don't pay any extra. You don't pay 101. You still pay the 100.
You know what, though? I would.
Pay the 101?
There's
no need for that.
But if I wanted to, would you get maybe another dollar from me?
No, if you paid 101, I would get a dollar and 1 cent.
What if I wanted you to have another full dollar?
Then you have to spend $200.
Well, this seems like that's too much. I just want to...
Then just give me a dollar, man. I'm right here in front of you. You can just give me a dollar.
Okay.
You don't have to go...
AriTheGreat.com.
Yeah.
And click the Amazon link. It takes me right to Amazon. I make my purchase as business as usual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boom. Was that hard?
No, it's amazing what the internet can do, that I can go from a link on your page. It takes me to Amazon. Then I sign in as Tate Fletcher on Amazon.
Yeah.
And then that
or
still
if you're
remembers
in your computer.
It still remembers.
In.
It still remembers the link that I went through to get that.
Yeah. See, hello, oh, Ari. I'm already signed in.
Is this like what Lloyd Irvin does?
You just earned your money. It's
for
$50.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I pay guests.
No, come on. Don't be silly. You can take me to lunch. But Lloyd Irvin was selling clicks or something off of Google for a while. Like Google clicks, like,
yeah,
he'd get like 10 cents for every click or
something. YouTube does that stuff. If you look at your videos that you have the rights to and make, it's like they'll pay you a certain percent back.
Amazing.
Because then the advertisers that are on there that can be seen, or the things that pop up that get annoying.
Yeah.
It's like for every 100 of those that pop up, one guy's like, well, what is this thing?
Crazy.
And so they're like, that's worth 2 cents.
Right.
Per click or whatever it is, you know?
It's a whole new world out there. You geeks are able to make a lot of money.
I'm not fucking coding it.
I know. You just look like a geek.
Have you ever had something with this, by the way, where a director tells you, I want you to do it look like this, and you're like, I physically cannot do that. Like, I will not be able to fly that far in the air without a harness.
No.
You don't say that.
I can do anything.
But, I mean, there must be some things where you're like, that's just not, I can't put my arm that far behind my back.
Well, that's not the way you say it. You go and your coordinator, your coordinator comes up and he's like, so what can you do? How can you make it look like this? What can you do like this?
Okay.
And then you got to sell it back. And then you go, oh, let's film it like that. Oh, dude, it can look just like this.
I can do it like this or this.
Yeah,
if you want that, I'll need to be shot out of a cannon because I can't fly that far with my legs. Like that.
You know, you just give them options that are better. Because usually as the athlete, you have better ideas than what they're talking about anyway. And if they're wanting to talk something that my human body can't do, they're talking about CG or they're talking about some other thing that's going to cost money.
Yeah.
And they're allergic to that shit. So they're like, let's do it this way.
They're allergic to money. That's soft, easy.
Sorry.
It's one of the biggest Jew things. Tay Sachs, and we're allergic to spending extra money to CGI.
Where are we going
to
have lunch?
Where do you want to go? I feel like I might pause for this, but we're almost.
Let's pause. Let's clear.
Well,
it out.
Just like with one more question, then we're done. I think.
All right.
Oh, how often do they put you in roles? Like, give you like, hey, do this.
See, I'm big, right? I'm a big person, and so a lot of actors aren't.
Yeah.
And so I don't. There's not really anybody I can double. I mean, like my buddy doubles The Rock and fucking.
But not doubles. I mean, like give you a part.
So like to double guys, that would be like a really good job to get. Like if there was an actor like Vinny Jones was like, I need you to be my double.
Okay.
And then I'm written into every time Vinny works, especially if he's like a fucking working actor, like working all the time. That's awesome for me. Right.
Yeah.
I don't have that luxury generally.
Yeah.
And so what I get is stunt performing roles. You know, there's stunt guys that you'll never see that are like, there's the mercenaries up on the roof and they get shot and they fall off the roof or whatever.
But you actually see their faces.
But they've got a balaclava on or something maybe. Maybe you don't even see their faces or whatever, you know. There's all kinds of places for stunt guys in there. Usually it's like that. But then sometimes if the director likes our look or whatever, they go, okay, you're going to play this role and this guy just dies horribly at the end, or it's like a stunt heavy role. Like, and that's a stunt performer. That's
like Jardine.
That's mostly what I do.
I saw him on Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, does he get that from, was he a stunt worker and they gave him like a full lines or do they,
they
hire him to do the lines?
What you're basically doing, what I'm doing is my acting role.
Yeah.
Isn't big enough to hire another man, which would be paid the same as the actor, to double him.
Right.
So
when you double, that means you're doing his stunts?
Yeah, where I'm pretending to be another guy.
Okay. The stand-in is the other thing.
A stand-in is just for lighting.
Just for lighting. That's what Tom Cruise has. He has his own stand-in.
And he's got a stunt double also.
And his own
that works out the stunts beforehand, and then he goes through and does them.
Wow.
So different act, but he can do that as a producer, like, it does, you know what I mean? It's like he's not.
Yeah.
It's a different thing.
Yeah. So they don't ever give stuff for a second. Do they ever give you? So they never give you speaking roles where they're like, oh, we need some guy to come in and
say, what I get.
You better get off my lawn.
That's what I get.
You get that.
Yeah.
As you're already doing stunt work for other parts in the movie. Okay, that's cool.
Like in Jonah Hex, I was like that. In
because at some point they're like, we need some guy for an hour, one shot. Let's just get, like, what are we going to have auditions for this? Tate, you're fine. Can you say, give me a beer?
Sure.
Can you do a deeper voice? You're in.
Yeah.
So they do that. So that's an extra bump in pay, right?
If
you get a speaking role for something?
No. As a stunt worker, to me, you're more valuable than the actor is, but to them, probably not. But
but you don't get any extra for
action? Yeah, no. You're there to be available to work, you know?
Okay, so whatever they need.
For whatever that is. You're already on the job. You're already being paid, you know?
And they don't ever tell you, like, pick up a box and bring it over here. That's something. That's not the kind of work they would ever tell you to do.
No, like that's grip work or something.
Okay, yeah. That first comes from, I remember picking something up. They're like, oh, look, the box of Chex Mix is in the shot.
Right.
So I just picked it up and like moved it outside because it was right next to
they
me.
Don't like,
all right,
that.
Someone else will do that. I'm like, it's okay. It's 2 feet.
Well, but a lot of reasons.
But it's like somebody's job.
And it's not only somebody's job, like a set dresser. Then they need that for the next shot. Where the fuck did Ari put it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they don't, you know what I mean? They want everything organized so that they know where it is for the next thing, too. So there's all that. Yeah. You know? So I try not to fuck with that, but then I'm available. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to pee. And then anything else you want to tell me about the stunt work that people should know?
All right.
Think for a second. All right. Let's wrap up.
And then we'll
go to rounds.
Let's wrap it up.
All right. So was there anything else?
Speaking of wrapping it up, how often do you wrap it up? Do you use condoms ever?
Yes.
With girls that aren't prostitutes, with regular girls, do you too?
Oh, I don't use it with prostitutes. I want to feel their pain.
Don't act like they don't demand that you use a condom.
They do, actually. It's a weird thing. It's a cool thing about prostitutes. It makes me trust them more. Where they're like, you're putting that on. Like, they just put it on you without question.
Yeah, otherwise, there's no deal.
And it's like, I like that. That means you probably do that with other people too.
Except for their crackhead boyfriend.
Oh, yeah, at home. They can do whatever they want. But, I usually wear it, like for most girls, not percentage, because when the girls that I don't wear it
what
on.
What kind do you wear?
I just got this new kind, the purple Durex.
I've heard of Durex. What about Skin? Have you heard of Skin? It's like S-K-Y-I-N and something.
I've not tried that. Those still seem to me like lambskins.
What about, is that against Judaism?
No, but the purple Durex, it's super lubed up on the inside. It's right. Like one of those.
So it feels good?
Feel like nothing.
Do you come quicker with a condom on?
No, wait. No.
Way opposite of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you?
I come right as soon as I put it on.
As soon as you put the condom on. You're like, safe sex is such a huge turn on to me.
That's awesome.
All right. So what else should people know about
stunt work?
About stunt work that they might not know that you're just a misconception.
I'm a big believer in like do whatever your dreams are and follow that.
Uh-huh.
But like what I got told about stunt work too is don't do that and keep doing whatever you're doing to make money because there's so many people that
don't do what?
Don't go into stunts.
Oh, and just
because you'll never succeed at it because there's so many guys and it's such a tight group to get into and so many excellent people.
But you found you've gotten your way in to the point where you're
refuse to be told no.
Yeah.
But it's wicked difficult. And I went on an audition yesterday. It's like heartbreak. Like, man, they really like me for this. Oh, I didn't get this. Oh, it's really, you know, and like. Dude, it's like you're in that space all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
It's tough.
Most people don't have the heart for it.
You have to say, like, it doesn't matter. It just means they like some dude. Doesn't mean you're negative.
Yeah, who knows how it matters.
Yeah.
I didn't get this part on this movie, Operation Geronimo, and I got another part.
Yeah.
And I was like, why'd that dude, like, Anson something or another, some dude that's on, like,
why'd he get
Hell
it?
On Wheels or something. It's some TV show they're filming up in Canada. And I saw the producer, and I was like, hey, bro, you remember when I auditioned for that part that guy got? And he goes, oh, yeah. He says, You were fucking excellent. You are a pick. And he says, the director loved you. I loved you. Like I was like, awesome. Right on, man. Thanks a bunch. I said, so what happened?
Why didn't I get the part?
And he's like, oh, you're asking why you didn't get. I said, yeah. And he says, well, we liked you all the way through it. And the producers in L.A., though, you know, they had their money and they're like, well, we don't know. What about this part? And me and John would always say, hey, Tate, we got the guy.
Yeah.
And then they ended up getting this guy because he was just on a TV series last year.
And they're like, yep, fine.
And that sells overseas. Yeah. He's out there and readable as another personality that people have seen. And so that's what you need. And he says, that's what it was about. He's like, so the guy's telling me I was better for the part.
Yeah.
But I didn't get it because, and I was like, God, it's so, how freeing is that to know as an actor or as a performer?
Renna Zissi saw this once on that Mall Cop or whatever movie that he was on with Kevin James, where Kevin was casting his next movie. Was Renzi on Mall Cop? Yeah, he was. And he was casting his next movie, and he was like getting a haircut or something like that, and somebody would come by with a laptop and say, hey, I don't know what the part was. Let's say Pizza Guy.
Right.
I don't know why I always say that about parts, but like Pizza Guy. It's like, hey, we need you to pick a Pizza Guy. We narrowed it down to 3 or 7, whatever it was.
Right.
And it's like they showed him one. He goes, yeah, that's fine. That's good.
Yep.
And I'm like, there's some other guy who's never second or third or fourth. It was like, man, I fucking nailed that. I went all the way through. I did producer session. I did casting director session. He's going to fucking love it. And then he didn't get it. And you're like, what did I do wrong? And you're like,
you
were third instead of first.
Yeah. That's what this guy told me once. He says, Tate, even if they tell you what it's about, it's never about what they say it's about. He's like, they don't even know what
they
it's about.
Right.
It's like none of it means anything. That's a trip.
That Kia commercial, I was just taking a commercial acting class. I don't know why I've talked about this one so much. I guess this is my first one, so I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And we're almost done.
No worries.
And And I asked them why I got it, because I assumed this was an audition. You had to look out your window, enjoy your standard air conditioner or something like that, and just start screaming like yes because you're so happy about it. Just put it away for 3 minutes.
I'm sorry, man. I'm looking at this picture of these guys, and I'm like, what is it? He's like, oh, I had to get an EKG, and so they shaved just that patch of chest hair off.
Clay's chest?
I think it's on Isaac's chest. And so they just shaved a patch of
hair,
right?
Yeah.
How creepy are they?
Oh, and Clay has a shaver, too.
Yeah, they both did it, I guess. Dirty fucks.
I can see Clay doing that to a solidarity because his looks a lot smaller.
Could be, yeah. Isaac really went the extra mile.
Clay looks like he's just like a razor and be like, I'll give you 1 inch.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Make it work.
Yeah. But I was like, did I get it because I like looked so like I was loving the air conditioning so much? Because that's what I was really trying to do during the audition.
Uh-huh.
I was like, let me really feel like I'm loving the standard air conditioner. And they're like, oh no, the way you screamed is like dorky. We liked it.
Right.
I was like, the scream?
It puts me at ease more than anything. I go in. You know what I do now is I look at the casting directors and shit and all that shit and all those cocksuckers in the room, and I look at them like I hate them.
Really?
Like, I'm like, I've got disdain, and I'm like,
why?
You guys are like, whatever. Because I used to really care, and I'd be like, oh, hey, how are you, sir? Da, da, da. And it's like, it's none of that. Like, you know what I get cast for?
What?
It's like girls that come up and want to fuck me. They don't want a gentle cuddling session. Like, any girl that approaches me and is like, dude, I'm really horny, I want to fuck that guy, and they're looking at me,
yeah,
they want to get handled by a gorilla.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? And it's like the same thing with these guys.
If they look at Kevin Christie, if they're looking then they at want someone to enjoy their...
If they're looking at me for a movie, I don't know who Kevin Christie is. Sorry, Kevin. They want me to be a scary Nazi Aryan, or they want me to be in a biker gang, or they want me to be like, fuck you. They want that all the way through the audition. So I'm just like, fucking whatever. I don't give a fuck anymore about all that.
Because then you look more like a badass.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's how Michael P. Keaton, they said.
I don't know who the fuck that is either.
Family Ties. That's the character's name for...
His name is P?
Michael P. Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
Oh, no. Oh, Alex P. Keaton. That's who it was.
Okay.
Alex P. Keaton.
Michael Keaton's another actor that was in a cocaine movie. You think Batman, I think cocaine.
Yeah. Right. But Alex Keaton, what's his name? Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox.
They said he didn't get that part in the beginning for Family Ties because they said he was a dick during the thing. And the rumor was that his agents had to call back. Like, no, he was a dick in the audition because that's his character.
Who did get the part?
Michael J. Fox.
No, who was gonna?
I don't know.
Imagine.
And later.
Because imagine if somebody else would have gotten the part. Maybe like Doogie Howser got the part and he ends up with Parkinson's.
Oh, Doogie Howser must love himself now.
You know?
I don't have Parkinson's now because of that. They talk about the curse of Family Ties.
Yep.
One out of every six regulars had Parkinson's in the end. all right, so was there anything else that you wanted to share about the network?
That's it.
Well, that's cool. Thank you.
People can call in and we'll field those questions later.
Call in now. We'll talk later. 555-217-9874.
Amazon.com/
No, not Amazon.com.
RTheGreat.com.
Click on the brown thing. Maybe I've got to get a better banner.
Click the brown dookie banner.
Yeah.
Gamefly.com/Ari.
All right.
2 week free.
What do you have coming up? Anything?
Jew trial.
Anything you want to promote or anything?
I don't know. I'd really like to get this Progressive commercial I tried out for yesterday.
It's not going to help.
And this won't help.
Or hurt. Yeah.
The Last Stand, Arnold's first movie back.
The Last Stand.
It's called The Last Stand, and I have a very prominent role as a bad guy in there.
With Schwarzenegger?
With Schwarzenegger.
No, Schwarzenegger and Stallone?
No, Schwarzenegger and Stallone is another one that they're filming right now.
Oh.
But The Last Stand ought to be out in the fall, maybe.
Do you ever know when you're working on a movie that it's shitty or good? Can you tell?
I can't tell, man. I worked on The Longest Yard, and one of Adam
Sandler's... Is that where you met Diaz?
Yep. That's where I first met John. Dude, I met that fat fucker. Here's a 350-pound guy or 400 and some pounds. And he is... It's 95 degrees in New Mexico. We're at 7,000 feet altitude. It's hot as shit out. We're on a football field. And here's this huge, fat Cuban guy, and he is rapping... Ready to Die, the whole album, fucking, and it's awesome, dude. And him and like Michael Irvin and Nelly are over there, and Joey is just taking them to town. It was great. Trying to have a cigarette. Let's go burn a number. Like, it was awesome. I was funny. We got to get this fat motherfucker some chlorophyll right now or something and a glass of water because he might die this afternoon.
And in the middle of a rap lyric.
And then we ended up being great friends, and, you know, it was amazing. Then I moved to L.A. on the job. But anyway, my point back to the thing is one of Adam's friends was doing a bunch of behind-the-scenes filming and a bunch of stuff, and he edited up a thing when they did the rap party for Santa Fe before they moved the location to
L.A.
L.A.?
Yeah.
And it was awesome. It was a dirty, awesome, like, football movie. Like, Any Given Sunday kind of awesome, like, gritty, fucking cool movie. Oh,
from the same footage.
And then it ended up being the shittiest movie ever. Whoever got the editing for the end of it, it was, like, corny and cheesy. And, like, I was like, God damn.
So you really can't tell
what
you're shooting.
I thought it was going to be a banger. So much of the artistry comes from the editor, I think.
Editing and post or whatever they call it.
Those editors and whoever does the post stuff.
Wow.
Dude, they make it or break it. And who knows? I don't know how that magic works.
That is kind of magical the way you talk about that. Like, you make it into a cool movie or just a family-friendly movie.
Dude, it's amazing. It makes all the difference.
Wow. I read the script for My Name is Earl, the pilot script. Yeah. When Azizi had it.
Yeah.
And it was a badass script. It was dark.
Right.
And fucking, like, dirty jokes.
Right.
And I'm like, this is going to be a cool goddamn show. And the show was fine, but it was, like, cutesy fine.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you took all the fucking meat out of this.
It's amazing, like, what a difference that stuff makes.
Yeah, and they had to, because it went for fucking 5 or 7 years or whatever it was.
Right.
And it's like, I guess it was a good decision monetarily. But
and that's the thing. You know, it's like, it blows my mind when Joe talked about being on that show.
Fear Factor?
Somebody's talked about being on the show with this thing, and then there's this girl, and then this guy and this girl are supposed to kiss, and it's like a late 90s show, and it's a black girl and it's a white guy supposed to make out.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, they ixnayed that because they said the rest of the country isn't ready to see an interracial makeout scene. And I thought, we're that racist as a fucking country still in the late 90s? Like, it's amazing to me. Yeah. And so, like, the stuff like that was really funny that you're reading, they're like, there's some governing body that looks at that and goes, nope, too soon for that. Yeah, we can't do it.
It's
and
like,
here's
sure,
what'll
we're
give
okay
longevity.
With it. We're okay with it, but they won't
it's
be
like,
okay with it.
We really like half and half. Most people are just skim milk, though.
Let's just go with
it. So let's just get the skim milk on
but that, to me, is why
so
most movies
shitty.
Suck. That's why most movies suck.
Because
it's just generalization
hey,
of
have
the
you
art
seen
forms
the raid?
In America. The Raid?
The Raid. It's an Indonesian action film.
It looks cool.
Holy fuck.
It's good?
It's amazing. It's so cool.
Hold on. Let me ask you a question.
All right.
When you watch movies like that, can you see the stunt work that went into it?
I'm starting to get better and better at it. Okay. You know, it's really interesting, the stunt work and watching the finished product on a film. It's kind of like being in a fight, or like not even being in a fight, but boxing.
Yeah.
And like if you box with, when I started boxing and I go with a really good boxer, I wouldn't even know where I was getting hit.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, and like I'd feel the hurt before I knew the shot was there, you know?
Yeah.
And those shots hurt way more. But like your eyes, all I can say is your eyes get better as you start to spar more.
Yeah.
And I start to see more. And then there's guys that suck worse than me, and I'm seeing more than them. I'm hitting them, and they're not knowing.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of thing that happens, and I feel the same thing. Like, as I get more adept at doing the work and at studying it, I can start to see where it is. And in that Indonesian movie, there's no stuntmen in there. There's like 50 actors, and I'm sure all of them died. There's one stunt coordinator. It doesn't have any stunt performer credits, and then it's all these actors. And they do some shit in there that's like, holy fuck.
It's badass.
And it's filmed in Indonesia, so you know that they don't give a shit
regulations.
About people. There's zero.
Like, as long as you kill less than 100
people,
it doesn't
looking
count.
At that. Yeah, exactly. It's phenomenal. But that's the director for this Arnold movie that I just did. The guy that directed that movie is one of his heroes. The South Korean director that did Arnold's movie looked up to the guy that did the Raid. So you see the Raid. So I'm thinking that Arnold's movie might have flavor of that kind of like crazy action.
The comics I looked up to, I wasn't able to fulfill the stuff I liked about them.
Right.
You know, for like a long time. Like, I don't know how to do a bit that harsh. I like it, but I don't know how to do it.
Yep. And then you're humping your microphone stand on stage, pretending that you're raping a girl.
Raping it, yeah. Got a rape.
Rape Squad. That's the new Death Squad, is Rape Squad. Ari Shaffir is doing it. Ranzizi is backing him up. And Tebow is the quality editor on it.
We should just go with a billboard outside, or just a big sign just saying discount rapes.
Sam Tripoli was going to be a part of it, but that's just a Saturday night for Sam. It's nothing special.
All right, fuck. 1:49. This show's going to be 2 hours. Intro. All right.
All right. Well, good.
So nothing to promote?
No.
Okay, that's cool. Thanks, man.
All right, man.
All my own stones I knew has changed its tune. Linking arms, sinking hearts.
58 in the books. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate it. I like these. That was a decent one. I liked it. Go to arishafir.com and see all my tour dates. And you can click on those banners to visit my sponsors, Amazon.com and Gamefly.com. Fuck, I forgot to say this in the introduction. God damn it. If you go to Amazon.com and click on that link, once you click on it, bookmark it. And then you won't have to go to my website anymore. So you can just bookmark Amazon. If you do a lot of Amazon shopping, just go through my website. Once you click on the banner and it opens up Amazon, then bookmark the Amazon. And you'll just always, if you go to that bookmark, you'll just always be supporting me and my show until I die. And then they will revoke that deal and it won't support anybody but Amazon. But until I'm dead, please go to my website and bookmark that shit. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. If you want to contact me with anything, I've been recording those podcasts with the provider, the prostitute, the escort, whatever you want to call her. Once we get like 7 or 8 done, we start getting our feet wet, so to speak. Unless it wasn't so to speak, and that was a term for fucking somebody with your toe, just putting it in their vaginas. Would that be getting your feet wet? Until then, nothing. We're just getting them ready. So we've got like 4 tape. Once we get like 8 or 9, whatever it is, then we'll start putting them out. So look for those soon. And if you have any questions, send them in to me at contact@arishafir.com or arithegreat.com. Either way, it still gets to me. Or you can email her. Her email address is goodiegoodiex@gmail.com. It's GOODIE. And then again, GOODIE, letter X, @gmail.com. Or write to me. Either way, we'll get to these questions. So if you have any like relationship or sex questions, some guy asked about losing his virginity, just be as detailed as possible. Tell us all the information we're going to need to talk about it. And that's what we're doing. It's kind of like a Love Lines, Dr. Ruth type show, but with a comedian and a hooker. We'll give you the real shit. So do that, I guess, if you have any. And be as detailed as possible. Tell us how old you are. Tell us all the fuck, how long you've been with the girl, if it's a thing like that, or how long you've been with the boy. Whatever it is, whatever your question is, be super detailed. And then if you want us to use your name, or if you don't want us to use it, just say. And we won't if you don't want us to. We usually don't say the name anyway, just because it doesn't really matter. All right, you guys, thanks for tuning in. Until next week. Hasta la vista, Ari Shafir, Skeptic Tank, number 58. The Stunt Man. Maybe just Stunt Man. Stunt Man. Stunt Machine. Stunt. Stuntastic. Maybe it's Stuntastic? Oh, fuck it.